Starmer had announced support for or access to bases for the very specific job of self-defence and pursuing our national interest. We barely mentioned Iraq yesterday, and yet it's probably the biggest thought in my mind this morning. I don't know if this is a simplistic question, and I appreciate there are some differences, but have we learned absolutely nothing?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a senior government figure has insisted the UK will take decisions based on British interests following renewed criticism by Donald Trump. The president says Sir Keir Starmer's initial decision to block the use of UK military sites against Iran was not helpful. He's also questioned the strength of the so-called special relationship. Speaking to LBC's Nick Ferrari, chief secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones defended the change in stance.
Our Prime Minister cannot dictate what Iran does in the Middle
East.
One day
you can't use the bases, the next day you can use the bases. I mean, it's risible, Mr. Jones.
So we couldn't use the bases for intervention.
International law, here we go.
But I think the public, Nick, are with the government on that. We've learnt the lessons from Iraq. We don't want to go back into war in the Middle East where there is no clear plan and no legal basis to do so.
Former Conservative Foreign Secretary Sir Jeremy Hunt has told LBC the government indecisiveness could have wider consequences.
America is questioning our loyalty, and that is very significant when it comes to, for example, their support in Ukraine, where we badly need them to carry on helping Ukraine withstand the Russian onslaught. I think we have to say, what is our big strategic interest here? We want stability in the Middle East, and we want to sustain American support for Ukraine. And on both those accounts, I think that means we should have been all in with the president.
Iran has carried out a fresh wave of attacks on several Gulf states as the conflict in the Middle East enters its fourth day. Donald Trump says America will retaliate soon. The head of the Metropolitan Police says he understands why some women still don't trust the force 5 years on from the murder of Sarah Everard. The 33-year-old was kidnapped and killed by the then-serving Met officer, Wayne Cousins. Samart Rowley says the Met has since strengthened its vetting processes and removed 1,500 officers and staff. And the Chancellor is preparing to deliver her spring statement this lunchtime. Rachel Reeves is expected to tell MPs that the government's plans for the economy are working. Borrowing and inflation could be revised down, but the latest outlook on growth and jobs is expected to have slowed. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 262 at 10,518. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most. Cloudy in the southwest, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
In a world of noise and uncertainty, IG is the investment platform that backs you. Take our flexible stocks ISA, which gives you the freedom to withdraw funds anytime and replace them in the same tax year, all without losing your £20,000 tax-free allowance. And if that's not enough, pay no commission on your stocks, shares and ETFs when you invest with IG. IG. Trade. Invest. Progress. Your capital's at risk. Other fees may apply. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and is subject to change.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. What is the most apposite or helpful cliche that you could deploy at a moment like this, I wonder? I've got one. Those who do not learn from history are condemned forever to repeat it. I don't know if it's watertight. I don't know if it covers all the bases all of the time. But my goodness me, it's fairly easy to understand at moments like this, isn't it? Because the shadow, the spectre of the Iraq war seems to me to loom large, not just over what is happening in Iran at the moment, Iraq's near neighbour, but also what is happening in Westminster and in political discourse. I've got two things written down on the piece of paper in front of me. That's it. That's the show. That's the that's what passes for preparation on this programme. I've got the word Iraq and the word Trump. written down in front of me, just in case I forget the key constituents of the conversation that I'm hoping to have with you. Iraq, because, obviously. And Trump, also because, obviously. Those who do not learn from history are condemned forever to repeat it. It seems to me that the basis of supporting or not supporting the United States of America in another Middle Eastern adventure, and that's a question that you can't answer without referring back to Iraq, but it's not the question we should be asking. It's not about supporting the United States of America. The United States of America, led by Donald Trump, is not our historical ally. He would throw us under a bus as soon as have another cheeseburger. He just would. And of course, it doesn't matter, these sycophantic, self-styled patriots and sort of people who claim to be fans of strongmen. The only thing they're drawn to about Donald Trump is the racism and the misogyny. Let's just be absolutely clear about that. He offers them nothing else except racism and misogyny. Whether you're writing a column for the Daily Mail about how you wish he was in charge here, or whether you're a voter in the United States of America, you've got a little bit more camouflage because you might have believed he'd bring down the cost of eggs or the price of petrol. But for the massive majority of people who seek to portray him as something other than a depraved delinquent, it's the racism and the misogyny with a fat side order of climate change denial, because that's where all the money can be made. And that's it. And that's it. So, should we be supporting the United States of America in another Middle Eastern war of highly dubious legality? That's a tough enough question to answer, and I think probably very hard to answer yes if your brain is working and you have any memory whatsoever of what happened in Iraq, what led up to Iraq, and what still unfolds in Iraq. And the question you should be asking instead is, should the British Prime Minister be unquestioningly following this US president into another almost certainly illegal adventure in the Middle East that has no plan? I mean, in many ways, and listen, stop me if you've heard this one before, in many ways, the deep and abiding and significant differences between the Iranian population and the Iraqi population notwithstanding, in many ways, this is an even madder prospect than Iraq. Because in Iraq, they at least pretended to have a plan, or they would have publicly acknowledged the necessity of having a plan. Somebody like Colin Powell, politically. I mean, to be honest, his words I never thought I'd say. Donald Trump makes George W. Bush look like Einstein. But there was at least a recognition that you should have had a plan. It emerged afterwards that there wasn't much of a plan. And that, of course, is why the Middle East descended into much worse chaos than it was in before American bombs and British people started landing in the country. But the idea expressed now by the White House and their closest allies that plans aren't our job. Plans are not our job. Aftermath is not our job. And I don't know whether it is the same old story about people not fully recognizing the scale of change that Trump represents, talking about him as you might have talked about Ronald Reagan, although Ronald Reagan, of course, enacted laws that made it illegal to assassinate foreign leaders without congressional approval. Hey-ho, on we go. You don't talk about him in the way that you talked about Barack Obama or George Bush or his son, George W. Bush. He represents something completely different. He's entirely detached from either actual or a pretense of principle or morality. And this, the two things that I have been really sort of obsessing about since we last spoke are those two words written down on the piece of paper in front of me. Iraq and Trump. The essence of Trump, a hideous human being. Oh, how dare you say that? You've all got Trump derangement syndrome. That's what you say if you love the racism, the misogyny, and the fat side order of climate change denial. He doesn't represent anything else. Now you're in the position of having to fend a US president who has launched more attacks on more countries than any other president in living memory, but who was elected on a promise to be peaceful. He was elected on a promise to put America first. He was elected on a promise not to take America into any more foreign wars or foreign engagements. And he's taken them into more than any other president in living memory. And yet you're still waving your flag. So you were waving your pathetic little flag when he was promising to be a president for peace. and you're still waving your pathetic little flag when he's actually turned out to be the most bellicose and warmongering president in living memory. Why? Because you love the racism, the misogyny, and the fat side order of climate change denial. And so many people on the thoughtful side of politics, on both sides of the Atlantic, are still a little bit frightened about stating it so plainly. Oh, we've got to give our full-throated support to Donald Trump. Why? You wouldn't trust him to babysit. Would you let him into your house to babysit for your children? No, but you're going to follow him into a war which has no legal justification. And then we come back to Iraq. That's all we're going to do today, isn't it? I suspect. Although I have got another question. I should probably write that down, which is the quote I referenced many times yesterday from David Petraeus, who sort of led that so-called surge in Iraq when they turned things around somewhat back in Gulf War II. Tell me how this ends. That might be the question that I ask you. Tell me how this ends. Simon Mars will join us later to talk us through what Marco Rubio has let slip. This sort of character, this whole cast of clowns that surround Donald Trump. Marcus Rubio has let slip that they essentially went in to attack Iran because they wanted to make sure that Iran didn't attack them after Israel went off the leash and attacked Iran without necessarily having got clearance. Well, you can hear it. We'll wait for Simon to have a look at that. It is coming up on the programme later today. And then you look at Iraq and you remember what happened. I was not really doing this for a living when the Iraq war happened. I wasn't paying as much attention to things as I should have done. I think I was just off the showbiz beat. I was still very wet behind the ears and very much a seagull following the trawler of UK media. We were playing Beat the Sweet on the programme and things like that. It's an extraordinary 20-year evolution. I hope largely for the better. The listening figures would suggest so. But what I mean is, I used to be, and in some days, and in some ways I still am, one of those people who feels in this profession, oh, I'm going to pick a side and then I'm going to furiously defend it. I'm going to check my scarf. Oh, I've got this coloured scarf on. Therefore, I must be in favour of bombing a Middle Eastern country, because I was last time. I've never met a war I didn't like, these people often seem to say, and I cannot quite yet. And I'm going to ask for your help with this. I cannot quite yet understand how anybody can be contemplating or assembling any opinion, any meaningful opinion about Iran that doesn't feature quite heavily Iraq. I just can't. Have a listen to what Keir Starmer had to say in the House of Commons yesterday, because you might not know it yet. The phone-in is going to be about what he's done and what he's decided, and this is what he said yesterday.
Mr. Speaker, we all remember the mistakes of Iraq, and we have learned those lessons. Any UK actions must always have a lawful basis and a viable, thought-through plan. I say again, we were not involved in the initial strikes on Iran, and we will not join offensive action now.
So I've written down a few more things. Lawful basis and a viable, thought-through plan. How can this be controversial? How can it be controversial? Having been involved in Iraq, and he's a Labour leader, albeit he wasn't in politics at the time, the legacy of that engagement has completely polluted the memories of Tony Blair's premiership, which did many, many good things, and sometimes, of course, by nature of being a supposedly leftish prime minister, he will always be pilloried with the negatives to the exclusion of all positives by the kind of people who pretend that Boris Johnson was more sinned against than sinning. But how can anybody with even a cursory memory of what happened in Iraq object to the idea that this time, as a bellicose American president, I love that word, you've probably noticed, a bellicose American president set sights on a Middle Eastern dictatorship that treats its own population with contempt, with murderous contempt? How can anybody contemplate the question of whether the UK should be in lockstep with that president without remembering the lessons of Iraq? Am I going mad? I look at the front pages of UK newspapers today, all of which were absolutely baying for blood in the run-up to the Iraq war. In action this day, PM won't hit Iran back. So that's the Sun newspaper. The Times manages to be a little bit more measured. Big strike coming, say US. And then things start going truly bonkers. The front page of the Daily Telegraph quotes the American president saying, "I am very disappointed in Kiev." Okay. The Daily Express, which still technically qualifies as a newspaper, but only just. "Trump is very disappointed in Sir Keir over Iran help." Daily Mirror, accurately reporting what's happening in Iran, chaos and fear. The Guardian, accurately reporting what's happening in the Middle East. Fears grow as Iran conflict spreads across Middle East. And then, of course, the mothership of madness in this country. US lambasts hand-wringing, pearl-clutching Starmer as Kemi, oh, bless her, says he's scared of his own voters. Kemi Badenoch claiming that Keir Starmer is motivated by fear of Muslim voters' response, which means she either doesn't understand the difference between Sunni and Shia, she doesn't understand the entire history of modern Islam, or she's pretending not to. And I, for one, don't think she's pretending. If it's a choice between is she thick as mince or is she pretending to be as thick as mince, I now come down on the she's as thick as mince on every single occasion. Farage, as I will demonstrate to you lately, bases his opinion on whether American presidents should go to war against Iran entirely on what colour the American president is. If he's black, it's a very, very bad idea. If he's bright orange, it's the best idea since sliced bread. And I can prove that to you later in the programme. Listen again to our Prime Minister. And listen, if you are relatively new to this programme or you haven't been tuning in a lot lately, I'm getting quite a lot of jip at the minute for being quite critical of Keir Starmer, for pointing out that he's doing a lot of things badly. In fact, in a beautiful reminder of why I'm not on Twitter anymore, I put a little post up on Blue Sky yesterday that was praising him for this, and indeed for correctly describing what Donald Trump is doing, trying to effect regime change from the skies, and why the UK doesn't want to be involved in that. And I said, very innocuously, why is he so good at this stuff and so bad at so much else? And of course, my replies immediately filled up with people insisting that he was actually bad at everything, and people who were insisting that he was actually good at everything, with no room between the two. And that's the point, really, isn't it? It's that you either knot a scarf around your neck so tightly that it cuts off the flow of blood to your head, or you allow your brain to keep functioning. And if your brain is functioning today, how on God's green earth can you not be thinking about Iraq?
Mr. Speaker, we all remember the mistakes of Iraq. Yeah. And we have learned those lessons. Yeah. Any UK actions must always have a lawful basis and a viable thought-through plan. I say again, we were not involved in the initial strikes on Iran, and we will not join offensive action now.
So the UK media, and it's at odds with the UK public, although they sort of managed opinion on that in the case of the Iraq war, it, on the right of UK politics, is united in the view that you do not need a viable thought-through plan or a lawful basis to go to war. I'm going to say that again, because sometimes I don't really appreciate the scale of what we're contemplating together until I actually get on air and start saying out loud what's been bubbling away in my brain all morning. The Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Express, your favourite broadcasters from various outlets are all now of the view, and they all told you Iraq would be brilliant, and they're now all telling you that we should do exactly what we did in Iraq and Iran, give or take a few statistical details, and that we do not need a lawful basis to do it or a viable thought-through plan to kick things off. Ah, what on earth is going on? You need to be quite, I don't think arrogant is the right word, although I have my moments, but it's a scary thing to do this sometimes when I have the privilege of sitting down with you in the morning and looking at what everybody else is doing and thinking they've all gone mad. But we did it with Brexit, we did it with Donald Trump, we did it with Liz Truss, we did it with austerity, we looked at what was going on, we looked at the evidence of our eyes and ears, and we concluded that they'd all gone bloody mad. Let's do in Iran. Wow, they're completely different places, Iran and Iraq. One ends with an N and one ends with a Q. Incredible, right? And so Keir Starmer, who's getting it in the neck from one lot for not doing enough to support Donald Trump, a depraved lunatic, that's not an opinion, that's counting, and he's getting it in the neck from the other lot for going too far and supporting Donald Trump, while in reality he has walked a tightrope of unimaginable complexity. And he's done it really, really well. And do you know why? Because he's a lawyer. He gets this stuff. I don't think he's a very good politician, and I will take a lot of persuading from that position. But I don't think he's a very good politician on the current evidence, but he's clearly a very good lawyer. He's a very good interpreter of international law. But even if you don't agree, how can you have allowed yourself, and it's not a majority of the UK public, I've got the latest polling, and it's 49% against strikes on Iran, the US strikes on Iran. It's not a question about the position Starmer has adopted, and only 28% in favour. But that means 28% of Britons. What an interesting figure 28% is, eh? Whew. Anyway, 28% of Britons don't think that you need a lawful basis or a viable thought-through plan before you start bombing civilians in the Middle East. I'll say that again. 28% of Britons do not think you need a lawful basis to bomb children in the Middle East or a viable thought-through plan about how the engagement will be both executed and concluded. And you are living in a country where we're about to embark upon a ludicrous and all too familiar media-led discourse designed to bring us round to supporting the almost identical madness to what we were all persuaded to support back in 2003. Don't at me to tell me that you didn't support it. I fully appreciate that. And yes, you were right and everyone else was wrong. But why on earth would anybody want to do it again? Why on earth would anybody want to do it again? 21 minutes after 10 is the time. So you can't stop America. America couldn't stop Israel. This is what Marco Rubio made clear yesterday. This is only bloody happening because America can't control Benjamin Netanyahu. You can't stop America. You can't stop Benjamin Netanyahu. You can't stop James O'Brien talking, judging by Eleanor's face and the way that she just gesticulated at her watch. But you can stop Britain being involved again in a ludicrous, illegal, immoral, and ultimately incredibly dangerous engagement in the Middle East. So who the hell can possibly have a problem with what Keir Starmer has done?
Conflict in the Middle East. Follow live on LBC.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
23 minutes after 10. We should make a list of things that everybody has willfully ignored or completely forgotten. I mean, at the top of the list, you put Trump's moral depravity. No, second place, you put Trump's moral depravity. And at the top of the list, you put the memory of the Iraq War. But under Trump's moral depravity, you put what he said about Afghanistan. America triggers Article 5 of NATO, and we, alongside many NATO allies, send people to die in Afghanistan. And he turns around a few years later and insults them in the most heinous and egregious fashion. And what are people like Cammy Badenoch and the Daily Mail queuing up to do today? Let's go with the guy. Let's attack our Prime Minister because he wants a lawful basis for war and a viable thought-through plan. And let's jump into bed with the bloke who danced on the graves of our dead. What was it, 3 months ago? I don't know a lot of the answers to a lot of the questions. But I do know that living in a country where public discourse is currently being groomed to oppose the idea that you should have a lawful basis for going to war and a viable thought-through plan as to how it's going to be executed and concluded is a mark of international insanity. And that's where we are. I don't know what the phone in is, but people have rung in, so I'll see what they've got to say. Mish is in Brackley. Mish, what would you like to say?
Hello there. Yeah, thank you for letting me on. I'm a avid supporter of yourself.
Do you have some chants? Do you wear a scarf? Do you have a T-shirt? How can you be an avid supporter of me? But anyway, you're very kind. Carry on.
I just wanted to say I'm really shocked with politicians and some of the public that are calling out Keir for not going on out full out on this war.
For not going to war without a lawful basis or a viable thought-through plan.
Absolutely.
I mean, what a whoopsie. How can anybody think you should have a lawful basis or a viable thought-through plan for going to war? Just nuts.
Yeah. I think Keir Starmer at the beginning, I'm not a fan, I'm going to admit, but I was actually quite happy with his first statement. But now, you know, he's got one foot in each now. What do you want to do, man?
I've told you what he wants to do, and he's told you what he wants to do. He wants to have a lawful basis for whatever he does in our name, and whatever he deploys UK military personnel or property to do, and he wants to have a viable thought-through plan. So when it comes to Iran launching missiles at our allies, or even at us, then he has a lawful basis for retaliation, and he has a viable thought-through plan on how to do it. So, I mean, you represent a lot of thought, as I've said. He's getting attacked from one side for not doing enough, and he's getting attacked from the other side for doing too much. But the best thing to have done at the moment is what you're describing as having a foot in two positions, because he doesn't. He has no foot whatsoever in support for the unlawful attack upon Iran, and he has both feet squarely in the place marked British national interest, lawful basis, and viable thought-through plan.
But I think the whole world should be worried at the moment with this international law that we talk about, because it only seems to suit certain Western countries when it matters to them. But it applies to them and not others.
I agree with you. Israel's breaking international law like it's going out of fashion, and it's an absolute historical tragedy that we haven't been more robust and more outspoken in our defense of international law, because it weakens us when we want to attack people like Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping for riding roughshod over international law themselves. And now, of course, Donald Trump moves into the space created by that silence and breaks international law like it's going out of fashion. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail today, just as a representative of the boneheaded British commentariat, writing about international law as if it's just a sort of unpleasant little interference in our desire to go around killing as many brown people as we want. But you can only be true to you, Mish. And so you don't uphold international law. You either believe in it or you don't. Keir Starmer believes in it. He's doing what he can to uphold it. And you can't really accuse him of dithering, because he's absolutely unequivocal that he doesn't support what Israel and America have done in Iran.
I
think I've bamboozled you into silence. I always come back against it. Mish, thank you. I am slightly taken aback by how strongly I feel about this. Just to indulge me again for a moment. And I'm going to work out why. I think it's because of Iraq more than anything else, but it's also because of the depravity of Donald Trump, and the way in which people who you might once have politely disagreed with hold opinions that are not just ignorant of reality and facts and history and past behavior, but utterly contemptuous of it. He called American soldiers killed in action losers and suckers. President and his allies have denied that the remarks were made, but the insults have been corroborated or confirmed by very senior people with a much more reliable track record of honesty than either Donald Trump or any of his current closest associates have got. So he thinks that people who died in wars are suckers and losers. He insulted the memory of all the men and women who died in British uniform or in British military service in Afghanistan. And now you've got people like Cammy Badenoch, and you name me a right-wing blowhard, and they'll be on the list as well, except Tim Stanley in The Telegraph, actually. You name me a right-wing blowhard, and I'll show you someone saying that we should be following Trump into war, following a man who has insulted our war dead and called his own war dead losers and suckers. Why wouldn't you follow him into a war? Oh, well, don't worry, James, because he's got a bang-up plan and he's got an entirely lawful basis for doing what he's doing. Yeah, there's a slight problem here, lads. He hasn't got a plan. They're boasting about not having a plan. They don't think it's their job to have a plan. They think that lawful basis for wars is just for the little people, and they have absolutely no idea how this is going to end. But let's throw our lot in with them anyway, because, oh, I don't know, something, 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 special relationship, something. 10:30 is the time. What a load of old crud. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
A senior government figure has insisted the UK will take international decisions based on British interests and legality. Donald Trump has branded Keir Starmer as not helpful in the US-Israel war against Iran. The Prime Minister has allowed the US to use UK military bases for defensive strikes, but says he doesn't believe in regime change from the skies. Iran has carried out a fresh wave of reprisal attacks against Gulf states as the conflict spreads across the Middle East. The US embassy in Riyadh has been hit by two drones, while Qatar and Kuwait have reported missiles in their airspace. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner says his force is still working to rebuild trust following the murder of Sarah Everard 5 years ago. The 33-year-old was kidnapped and killed by the then-serving Met officer, Wayne Cousins. And the Chancellor will deliver her spring statement this lunchtime. Rachel Reeves is expected to tell MPs the government's plans for the economy are working, but no new spend or tax policies are expected to be announced. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most, cloudy in the southwest, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Creatives, it's time to get prep for the media business, and where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy, apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. globalacademy.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:33 is the time. So I'm adding things to what I'm writing down in front of me, because try to make sense of madness sometimes. I've got Iraq at the top of the list. I've got Trump in second place. I've got the words lawful basis and viable thought through plan. This is the skeleton from which we sort of assemble, hopefully, something that will make sense in a time of extraordinary, international idiocy. So lawful basis, viable thought through plan. I've written down, tell me how this ends, which is what David Petraeus, of course, famously said during Gulf War II. And I've also written down 454. Why have I written down 454? Anybody? Bueller? Do you know why I've written down 454? Here's a clue.
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines. But we've been very good to Europe and to many other countries. And, you know, now under my administration, that began because we had a very successful first term. That began then, but it has to be a two-way street.
I don't know why that upsets me so much. I'm not from a military family. I have school friends that went to war, including in that one. I've done a little bit of work. I'm just putting in context. I've had meaningless contributions to some of the charities that deal with the people who come back from war heavily traumatized or disabled. And that man insults. You've worked out why 454 is on my piece of paper, haven't you? 454 British servicemen and women gave their lives in Afghanistan, having answered the call from our ally, the United States of America. And you just heard Donald Trump. I can't say the words on the radio that I want to say. And I'm going to stop doing this job when I stop caring about things, because I don't want to turn into one of those presenters who just gets their opinions out of the fridge or the Daily Mail every morning and shouts them while sticking their fingers in their ears and going la, 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 la. I don't see the point, you know. But I care so much about that, about what he said back in January. And you can only support him now if you don't care. Yeah, why wouldn't we trust him? Why wouldn't we throw our lot in with a man who has no lawful basis for attacking Iran, who has no viable thought-through plan, who has a long history of personal and public moral depravity, and who said this about 454 dead British servicemen and women who gave their lives in Afghanistan?
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines. But we've been very good to Europe and to many other countries. And, you know, now under my administration, that began because we had a very successful first term. That began then, but it has to be a two-way street.
And another number. I think it's 5, is it? The number of times he dodged the draft by lying about a medical condition to avoid military service in Vietnam. So his own military heroes are losers and suckers. You remember how he treated that Gold Star family during his first presidential campaign? Our British military heroes and Danes and many other NATO allies are cowards who hold a little back and didn't really help. They just all got killed somehow by accident while staying away from the fray. He doesn't have a lawful basis for doing what he's doing. He doesn't have a viable thought-through plan. And if you do throw your lot in with Donald Trump on a Monday, he can quite happily turn around and punch you in the face on a Tuesday. So, down with Keir Starmer, says the right-wing Brexit commentariat, and up with Donald Trump. Can anyone explain that to me? Particularly now, through the three lenses of the Iraq War, Donald Trump's well-established, let's just say unreliability, if you're uncomfortable with the word depravity, and the 454 British war dead that he insulted in the most hideous and heinous fashion.
But I think this is what Trump derangement syndrome sounds like. No wonder people try to silence those of us who refuse to stop telling the most simple and obvious truths. And this is the guy we should have gone to war with. I haven't even asked a question yet this morning, and I've barely taken any calls, but that's the way the show unfolds sometimes. Marge is in Haringey. Marge, what would you like to say?
Hey, James. I just want to say that I understand your point about Trump having said this, what he said about British troops, and I don't approve of it. He has also said a lot of things, vile things about women. I don't approve of those either. But that doesn't mean he's wrong in going to war with Iran. Absolutely
well,
not.
Except under international law. That's why Keir Starmer says you need a lawful basis to do it.
Okay, let's talk about international law.
I'm going to have to sort your phone line out, and we will do, and we'll get you back shortly. Sam's in Penge. Sam, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Good Lord. I've just gone from one of the worst phone lines of the week to one of the absolute best. It sounds like you're in the room with me. What's on your mind, Sam?
James, I come from a small country in the Balkans originally. Without the intervention of the West, America, UK, NATO, I wouldn't have a country to go back to in the summer, if that makes sense.
Kosovo.
Kosovo. We're very grateful for what they've done. There was a clear, thought-out plan. There was guidance, and they held our hands until we created our nation. It's going swimmingly now. Democracy is in full swing. It doesn't suit everybody, but unfortunately, that's just life. So we've got case studies to say, well done, this is what should have happened, this is the case. In the case of Iran and what's going on right now, before Donald Trump was elected, the right-wing media went out of their way to tell us that he said no to war. He's not going to war.
I know. The same people who are saying, oh, no, let's get stuck into this one. And also, let's bomb Nigeria on Christmas Day. And also, well, I'll go on, but you're talking now. I'll shut up for
a while. These are the same people that led us to war in the first place when we went to Iraq and Afghanistan as well. It wasn't about democracy. It wasn't about anything to do with helping the people, like what they're trying to tell us it's going to be in Iran. It's all about money and wealth and oil. The reason why they kidnapped Venezuela's president before doing all of this is to guarantee their oil supplies while this is all going, because no oil was getting through the Strait of Hormuz. So they knew all of this was going to happen. This is why all of this has gone on. And we have guys in the media who tell us, oh, you're deranged. We're not deranged. Mm. As Brits, I believe, I hate to sound, you know, too smart or, you know, we're above the world, but we kind of always see through the clouds, if that makes sense. We can always kind of see the rubbish that goes on within the world, and we kind of hold ourselves to a better kind of status sometimes, I think, as Brits. At this point, it's those who were really loud in the beginning against Starmer, pro-Trump, are very quiet now. They don't want to debate. They don't want to talk to you anymore. Because I try and get through in the mornings all the time now, but I don't get through no more because they don't want to have conversations.
I have no idea what you're referring to. Mm. You're wrong as well, because there's entire television stations dedicated to pretending that Donald Trump hasn't turned out to be any of the things that his critics warned he would, because he'd already demonstrated that he would be that. But are there any positive lessons, and I ask this somewhat cautiously, to be learned from Kosovo? I mean, they are completely different scenarios. The Serb aggression in Kosovo it was a war zone. It wasn't a country living under dictatorship, a murderous dictatorship visiting horrors. It wasn't regime change, was it? It was a sort of defence and rebuilding project. So are there any positive parallels that could be drawn by people who want to feel a little bit more comfortable about what is happening in Iran at the moment?
We're not looking at the 90s America. We're not looking at the Bill Clintons and the George Bush seniors. We're not looking at these guys anymore. We're talking about convicted criminals. This guy's a convicted criminal. It's potatoes and tomatoes. You cannot compare what went on in Kosovo in the late 90s and the freedom that they provided us. James, Kosovo was voted one of the happiest places to live in the world, not just in the Balkans, not just in Europe, in the world. This is a country that we were being murdered in our own homes less than 25 years ago, James. Do you understand?
I do understand. I've got Kosovan friends, actually, and one of the things they tell me that I didn't believe until I checked
checked it out for myself, is that there's quite a bunch of people, there's a bunch of kids in Kosovo of a certain age whose first name is Tony Blair. As if it's one name. They're called things like Tony Blair Jones. I don't know what a typical Kosovan surname would be, but Tony Blair Blenkinsop and Tony Blair O'Brien. And that is an indication of what you are describing and what can be achieved. But it wasn't regime change in the sense that was affected or attempted in Iraq. And I know you know this, or indeed in Iran. And that's the worry. Does anyone mourn the passing of the Ayatollah? No. Can anyone point to a precedent from history that says things are going to get better for the resident population? 0345 6060 973. Let's go back to Marge in Haringey on a hopefully improved line. Marge, where were we?
Apologies for the
it's
bad
not your
line.
Fault, yes. Unless you work for BT, of course.
Can you be in agreement that the fact that Trump has said such and such doesn't authorize us to immediately say whatever he does from this point on is wrong? Doesn't give us that automatic right to say that. Then we go back to international law, as you were mentioning. Can we agree on this?
On what? But that a stop clock can be right twice a day?
On the fact that he has said some vile things about women, some wrong things about the British soldiers, doesn't automatically mean that he is wrong about going into war and asking
no,
for
help. No, of course
help.
Not. It's a question of trust. Okay. It's a question of trust. Right. Would you trust that man?
Okay. Now you talk about international law.
No, I'm talking about trust now.
Okay.
Why would you trust that man?
I will tell you in a minute. Let's talk about international law and we come to trust. You talk about international law and this war being against international law, okay? Now, have you forgotten that...
The phone line's not better. I'm also going to be a little bit late for the break, but I don't want you to feel squeezed. So, by all means, sort of answer the questions that you want to answer. We're not going to have time to move on to trust, but just if you can do it quite concisely, the point that you're making about international law... And
yes.
Hopefully the phone line will hold up.
The fact that the Iranian regime killed 40,000 people,
yes.
There is right to protect, there is crime against humanity. Yes, it hasn't been authorized by U.S. Security Council, but how are we ever going to get that when Russia and China...
Well, this is the point,
council?
Isn't it? This is, I mean, Russia and
tell
China...
Me, I am Iranian.
Well, no, I know you are.
Receiving end of the gun.
I mean, you
asked me
three questions, and I can try to answer them. Because what you're defending is killing more Iranian civilians as a punishment for the regime that killed Iranian civilians.
No, you are asking for military help.
Well, no, but the military help is currently bombing girls' schools.
No.
Yes.
There you go. Where is the official analysis of who hit that school?
Okay, this is sounding a lot like conversations that
listen
we had about Gaza now.
No,
so,
listen
so
to me.
I am listening
family
to you. I think
and niece and nephew in the schools.
Nobody is going to mourn the passing
before
of the Ayatollah. No,
happened,
okay, fine.
Listen to me. Before this attack happened, it was going round and round that there were leaks that Iranian regime was aiming to hit schools to blame it on the U.S. so that the media turn against them.
Yes, and this is exactly the same narrative that was followed after attacks on Gaza, and when the news agenda was being dominated by people who were seeking to defend or excuse or deny the atrocities rather than people who were seeking to condemn them. I've tried to have a conversation with you, and I appreciate, as an Iranian, your feelings are going to be running a heck of a lot more high than mine are, but killing Iranian civilians in order to punish a regime that kills Iranian civilians looks a little bit odd, and the lessons of Iraq, notwithstanding, quite how anybody would trust Donald Trump to serve their interests is beyond me. This will help. The one of the best calls we took last time, Donald Trump had eradicated the threat of the Iranian regime. You know, remember 9 months ago when he completed a historical victory that would be for the ages and meant that Iran had been removed from the threat list forever. 9 months ago, when Donald Trump did that, someone rang me to say, if your house is being held hostage, if your children are being held hostage, you would even celebrate a rapist coming to rescue your children. And I get that. My worry, Marge, and yours as well soon, will be what happens the day after.
10:47 is the time.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
There is obviously a very high chance that what Trump did in hitting Iran and killing Khomeini is against international law. But where was international law when Khomeini's regime was killing thousands of their own civilians? Where was it when women were being repressed en masse, when Iran was funneling weapons and cash to terrorists? Where was international law then? So what use this international law?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:51 is the time. Listen, if I had Iranian family, I probably wouldn't see the clarity of this position myself, because I would be much more concerned about my family and my country. But claiming that it's okay to break international law because your enemies who break international law break international law is about as stupid a position as it's possible to adopt in these kind of moments. Stupid's not the right word to use, but it's about as unhelpful a position. What's the point of international law if people break it? Well, by that logic, what's the point of any law if people break it? I'm going to go and murder somebody because somebody else murdered somebody yesterday. Or I'm going to go and murder murderers. We're going to murder shoplift. I mean, what's the point of any law at all if your rationale for not obeying it is that other people don't obey it? It's a wonderful line in A Man for All Seasons. And my friend Martin Shaw, I hope, will appreciate this because he played Sir Thomas More relatively recently. And the line is so powerful. I'm grateful to Anthony for reminding me of it. This country is planted thick with laws from coast to coast. Man's laws, not God's laws. And if you cut them down and you're just the man to do it, do you really think you could stand upright in the winds that would blow then? Yes, I'd give the devil the benefit of law for my own safety's sake. Laws protect everybody until they don't. And just because people break laws, the idea that that then justifies you breaking the law is, look, it's not an unpopular position. Henry VIII was trying to do it back when Sir Thomas More, albeit that those are the words of Robert Bolt rather than Thomas More himself, he went to the gallows. He went to to the axe man. He had his head chopped off for his trouble for simply saying that you cannot ride roughshod over the law, whether you're a king, whether you're a dictator, whether you're a Daily Mail columnist. You cannot ignore the law, whether domestic or international, without becoming as bad as the people that you are claiming to be better than. And that's the position. That's essentially the position. So nobody mourns the passing of the Ayatollah. Or nobody that I can respect mourns the passing of the Ayatollah. But the idea that you can break international law to punish people who break international law makes you as bad as them. And when you look at the people who have assassinated the Ayatollah, and in Netanyahu's case in particular, their relationship with international law, the idea that there's any moral high ground anywhere in this conflict is palpably absurd. And nobody seems to understand that except Keir Starmer. Lawful basis, viable thought-through plan. You got neither, but you're still in favour of it. Then you've forgotten all about Iraq. I'm really sorry. I don't do this very often these days. I think I probably used to do it rather more. But I do think it's pretty close to impenetrable, that position. I think it's pretty close to unassailable. You're in favour of going into war in the Middle East without a lawful basis or a viable thought-through plan. Okay, because you think getting rid of the regime is so important. That was the argument in Iraq. Tell me how that went. End of argument. End of conversation. Well, hopefully not, because we're here for another 2 hours. Don's in Darlington. Don, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I was saying to your producer, I was the IED bomb disposal operator up in the Maysan province in 2006 when I was in Iraq.
Okay.
And some of the complexities of the IEDs that we were finding and recovering had a massive hint of Iranian know-how and intel, even to the point where the cables had "Made in Iran" written on the side of the cables.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and what I'm thinking now is possibly what's happening now, and from the IEDs that I did recover, that the Iranian military are probably now hiding all their military ordnance, waiting for this warfare or airfare campaign to sort of subside, and hopefully inviting boots on the ground. And when they can then start employing the tactics of IEDs like they did in Iraq.
I mean, you're jumping forward a little bit to the conversation about tell me how this will end. And what I've read, and you obviously know a lot more about this than I do in many ways, but what I've read is that the bulk of their slightly sort of prehistoric armaments are drones. That they've got they've got loads and loads and loads of second-rate drones that they will just launch indiscriminately at soft targets when they get the first opportunity to do so. I.e., in your words, when the current air attacks have ended, and that's why you're already seeing civilian targeting and hotels going up in Dubai and places like that. So I don't know, and I hope that I'm right on this one. I don't want to be wrong. I don't know that boots on the ground is a viable prospect at all.
But as again, Keir Starmer says, you never enforce regime
from the skies,
from the air. Yeah. No. So at some point, someone has to then, because the Iranian Republic Guard will literally just disappear, as they did when the order was given in Iraq not to employ any Ba'athist.
Yeah.
In political positions. They could have had law and order on the streets of Baghdad, they said, within 48 hours, if they just accepted it. They obviously negated that. Suddenly you had 100,000 men who didn't have a job, no means of income, hence the insurgency happened. And
some of them came back later as members of ISIS, of course, as well.
Of course, yeah, and there's going to be a vacuum there, and I'm sure those who in Syria and think they're not as aggressive will move across the border and fill that void, and suddenly you'll have, again, Iraq too, but 10 times worse, because the capabilities that...
Here's a weird thing, but I think that's less likely to happen than it did in Iraq, because Donald Trump will get bored.
Well, that's true, but then you've got another caliphate suddenly popping up in the Middle East on the doorsteps of everybody else.
This is where Starmer's words about the lawful basis, and I think Marge reminded us that if you have family in Iran and you desperately want the regime to go, then you don't care about the lawful basis. But the job of those of us who can be completely objective is to remind them that you have to care about the lawful basis, because without the lawful basis, it's anarchy, international anarchy. And then the second bit,
of course, is the well-thought-through plan, the viable thought-through plan. Keir Starmer having to remind Parliament yesterday of what happens when you go to war in the Middle East without a viable thought-through plan. And in Iraq, they at least acknowledged the preferable nature of having one. You know, whether they pretended they had one or not is moot, but they, no one argued that you shouldn't have one. Nobody said you don't need a plan. This time, that's what they're doing. They are literally saying it's not our job to have a plan. Lindsey Graham yesterday, it's not Donald Trump's job to have a plan. What is his job if it's not to have a plan?
Yeah, you are literally causing a massive vacuum that someone will take opportunity and fill that void, and you will then make the world as unsafer place. I mean, if you remember back in the early days of YouTube, when we used to see the footage of the IEDs exploding and lifting tanks and throwing them over there, and, you know, they were just peeling the road back and putting IEDs under the tarmac.
You know, I understand why you would fear that and also warn against it. My inferior understanding of the issues makes me less worried about that particular outcome. And again, not least because one of the big worries, if it is a worry, well, it should be a worry because, of course, the absence of any plan for what happens afterwards is a large part of the reason why, as Don has just explained, Iraq fell into such hideous circumstances, but a large part of that is that Trump might just get bored. He might just walk away. How long ago was he accepting a FIFA Peace Prize? Do you remember Donald Trump accepting a FIFA Peace Prize? The football people, because he didn't win the Nobel Peace Prize, which he thought he should have won despite actually ordering more military strikes against more countries than any other president in the modern era. He didn't win the Nobel Peace Prize, so FIFA invented one for him and gave it. Does he have to give that back now, do you think? Answers on a postcard, please.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, a senior government figure has insisted the UK will take international decisions based on British interests and legality. Donald Trump has branded Keir Starmer as not helpful in the US-Israel war against Iran. The US president has again criticised Keir for initially blocking the use of UK military sites for defensive strikes. Speaking to LBC this morning, the chief secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, rejected claims that relations with the US have been damaged.
I don't think that's true. I mean, operationally, the UK and the US are working together right now in the Middle East, and of course, intelligence sharing and trade and business and all that stuff continues. I recognise that the President would rather that we were involved in the initial intervention between the Americans and the Israelis for offensive action in Iran and the Middle East, but the Prime Minister has been very clear that we will only engage British armed forces where there is a legal basis to do so.
Overnight, Iran carried out a fresh wave of reprisal attacks against Gulf states. Donald Trump says America will retaliate soon. Six US soldiers have been killed in the military campaign since Saturday. US Secretary of State Marco Rubio told reporters that American action will continue until Iran's missile sites are destroyed.
The hardest hits are yet to come from the US military. The next phase will be even more punishing on Iran than it is right now. Someone was screaming, how long will it take? I don't know how long it'll take. We have objectives. The world will be a safer place when we're done with this operation.
Oil prices have risen further this morning as the conflict in the Middle East is now in its fourth day. Brent crude rose by another 4% to stand at a one-year high of nearly $81 a barrel. The head of the Metropolitan Police says his force is still working to rebuild trust following the murder of Sarah Everard 5 years ago. The 33-year-old was kidnapped and killed by a serving Met officer in South London in 2021. Smart Rowley says the force has improved its vetting processes and removed 1,500 officers and staff since then, but he conceded that flaws allowed her killer into the Met.
We've got through a large part of the problem, but I'm not saying we've got through all of it. She should still be alive today, and if policing was better, then she might be still alive today.
The Chancellor will give an update on her plans for the UK economy when she delivers the spring forecast this lunchtime. Rachel Reeves is expected to tell MPs that the government has the right economic plan. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 330 at £10,449. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most, cloudy in the southwest, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with mum again.
May Lorcas stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Backing your future.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 11. So, I mean, the job of a law is to be dispassionate. It is why, for example, the families of murder victims don't decide what sentence a murderer receives. It's also why the families of murder victims don't decide upon the guilt or innocence of somebody accused of murdering their loved one. We have juries, of course, but by definition, juries have to be dispassionate. That's why the bar for jury service can be quite high. You have to have no preconceptions, or you have to have a demonstrable objectivity. Sounds a bit idealistic in the modern world, doesn't it, with 24/7 news wanging away in the background all the time. But the law has to be unemotional. And to say that we're going to break the law because that person over there broke the law is an emotional response. If I was Iranian, let me be absolutely clear, I would be torn at the moment between welcoming the removal of the Ayatollah and terror at what was likely to replace it. And the minute I started looking at who was responsible for removing the Ayatollah, and therefore in a normal universe would bear some responsibility for presiding over what replaced it, my terror would turn to ice. Because it's Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. If I were Iranian, my emotions would be all over the place. And if you dial up the empathy for the people locked up in jails for wearing their headscarves wrong, or killed by the Revolutionary Guard for invented affronts to the Ayatollah's dignity, you can easily call for, you don't care who drops the bombs. You'd send in a platoon of absolute undescribables to remove a regime as hideous as the Ayatollah's. And that's where emotion leads you. And that's not what the law is for. The law is for the opposite of emotion. The law, by definition, has to be objective. It's an imperfect instrument, but my God, it's better than anything else you've got. So you have the law, and you have history, and you have knowledge. And you take those three things, and you mould them together into a lens through which you look at what America and Israel are doing to Iran. And you have to try to leave emotion at the door. And if you do leave emotion at the door, then, and I don't think I could do this if I was Iranian, then the idea that you should support what appears to be in many ways a repeat of the Iraq war, led by a man who routinely maligns the military dead from his own country, and even worse when it is the dead of his country's allies, who dodged the draft himself, describes dead veterans or dead soldiers as suckers and losers. How on earth, if you're being unemotional, you can be in favour of this activity is currently beyond me. The law is the opposite of populism or emotion or whatever it is that Donald Trump trades in. History, yes, is written by the victors, but contains important and crucial lessons about the present. And finally, the knowledge of a man. The knowledge of who somebody is and what they represent. Benjamin Netanyahu, the leader of a genocide. Donald Trump, where do you even begin? The serial felon. The man who boasts about sexually assaulting women and gets defended, of course, by people like Nigel Farage. The man who lies still about the democracy that he benefited from twice, but lied about it when he lost.
This is the man you charge with bringing peace or democracy to a Middle Eastern country? Okay, let's suspend disbelief that this man could do it and look instead at what happened the last time America tried to. And then you come back to Iraq. So, how do people, and they are usually people that were in favour of the last Iraq war, and yes, I think they're probably people who were cheerleading the four donkeys of the Kropopolips at various points over the last 10 years as well. The people saying, but the people writing the Daily Mail front pages and the people framing Farage or Badenoch's position on this, pro-Brexit, pro-austerity, pro-Boris Johnson, pro-Liz Truss, pro-Gulf War II, although they deny that now, and pro-this. How can they be pro-this unless you are emotionally married to the country, to the issue? How can anybody objective think that this looks like a good idea? Which leaves Keir Starmer absolutely on the money when he disassociates himself from the original attack and supports wholeheartedly the defence of our allies and the defence of our interests. It's not often I sit here, not since Brexit, actually, or COVID, when I thought that Dominic Cummings had a master plan, and think that the truth is so blindingly obvious that I truly can't understand why other people can't see it. Jeremy Clarkson said that about me once. I think it was meant to be an insult, but I kind of took it as a compliment. He wrote it nicely. He said, I love James. He genuinely can't seem to understand why anybody ever disagrees with him. And I look back on those four things. Brexit, Donald Trump, five things. Brexit, Donald Trump, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity. And I think, yeah, I still can't understand why anybody would disagree with me. How much more right do you have to be proved about something? And I really hope this doesn't become the sixth. I can't claim that I was right about Iraq. I wasn't in the job, and I wasn't right, for the record. I had this rhetorical flourish where I'd say, if you've got 10 murderous dictators lined up against a wall and you've only got one bullet, then why on earth wouldn't you shoot one of them? To which, of course, the international law question would be the answer. It makes you a murderer, mate. Ronald Reagan passed a law to forbid American regimes or administrations from assassinating foreign leaders without congressional approval. Ronald Reagan, the original hawk. The man who put the con into neocon. That doesn't quite work, but you know me, I love a bit of wordplay. And here we are now watching people look at the world stage and think, I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to give Donald Trump a hand grenade and invite him to lob it wherever he wants. And if the British Prime Minister says that doesn't look like a very good idea, we must attack the British Prime Minister. We must attack the British Prime Minister if he points out that going to war with no lawful basis and no viable thought-through plan is a bad idea. Stone him! Don't attack the bloke doing it. The bloke going to war with no lawful basis and no viable thought-through plan. Attack the bloke suggesting that that's not a very good idea. And that's the bit I don't get. How can you do that if you are vaguely aware of Donald Trump's personal and political history and the Iraq war? 03456060973. And I don't want to exclude Iranian people from the conversation, but if you are Iranian, I understand how you can do it, because if your children were being held hostage in a house and the only person coming to the rescue was a rapist, you would bite his arm off. But what happens next? What happens next? It's 11 after 11. I have some phone lines free now for the first time since 10 o'clock. 03456060973. Three is the number that you need. I don't know if Starmer can make the argument that he needs to make. I don't know if he can make the argument that we're making today, but it is, when you get down to it, blindingly obvious. Whatever the emotional pull may be to dispose of the Ayatollah, and I will be absolutely clear about my welcoming of that conclusion, but you can have two thoughts in your head at the same time. And this can't end well. And if you think Donald Trump cares about how it ends for the Iranian people, or how it ends for the servicemen and women who are now in the danger zone, if you think Donald Trump cares about anything at all, except Donald Trump, then I have a bridge that I would quite like to sell you. So yesterday he was bestowing a Medal of Honor And you would imagine in that moment, wouldn't you, that he'd be able to focus upon the gravity of the situation and the importance of the recipient. Well, have a little listen to what happened.
See that nice drape? When that comes down right now, you see a very, very deep hole. But in about a year and a half from now, you're going to see a very, very beautiful building. And there's your entrance to it right there. In fact, it looks so nice, I think I'll save money on the doors, because it can't get more beautiful than that. I picked those drapes in my first term. I always liked gold, but I think we can save a lot of money. I just saved curtains.
But, that is a speech given at a ceremony recognizing three U.S. Army soldiers with the Medal of Honor at the White House yesterday. Two of the commendations were being awarded posthumously. Retired Command Sergeant Major Terry P. Richardson was recognized for actions during the Vietnam War that, of course, Donald Trump avoided by lying about a medical condition. He was credited with saving the lives of 85 other service members. Staff Sergeant Michael H. Ollis was killed in action in Afghanistan. You remember that war where the NATO allies held back a bit and didn't really help, and 454 British men and women somehow ended up dead. He was recognized for valor during the combat by the man who considers the war dead to be suckers and losers. And Master Sergeant Roderick W. Edmonds was recognized for his leadership and resistance as a prisoner of war in Germany during World War II. And in a speech dedicated to honoring those men, Donald Trump did this.
See that nice drape? When that comes down right now, you see a very, very deep hole. But in about a year and a half from now, you're going to see a very, very beautiful building. And there's your entrance to it right there. In fact, it looks so nice, I think I'll save money on the doors, because it can't get more beautiful than that. I picked those drapes in my first term. I always liked gold, but I think we can save a lot of money. I just saved curtains. But it'll be spectacular. It'll be the most beautiful ballroom. I believe it's because I built many a ballroom. I believe it's going to be the most beautiful ballroom anywhere in the world. And when you hear all that hammering out there, you know why the First Lady is not thrilled exactly. She said, will the pile drivers ever stop? You know, they go from 6 in the morning till 11:30 in
if
the evening.
Can you're just joining us, this is here? President Donald Trump honoring the memories, you know, of retired Command Sergeant Major Terry P. Richardson, Staff Sergeant Michael H. Ollis, who was killed in action in Afghanistan. Retired Command Sergeant Richardson is still with us happily, but Major Sergeant Roderick W. Edmonds is not. He died in 1985. They received the Medal of Honor yesterday in the name of Congress, and here is Donald Trump honoring them at that ceremony.
It means money, so I like it, but my wife isn't thrilled. She said, this is getting crazy. I said, don't worry about it. We'll be all finished up in a few months.
LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability terms apply.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor?
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 11:17, and I don't know what you're reaching for.
If you are going to ignore what we know to be true about Trump, if you are going to ignore the contempt in which he holds military personnel, both American and allies, and you are going to completely ignore the lessons of the Iraq war, I don't know what you... I mean, how? Why would you do that? If you're Iranian, I get it. You just want today to be over. Get rid of the Ayatollah. We'll worry about what comes next. But if you're not, you know what comes next. You know what comes next. It's 11:18. Henry Riley's back in the building. Well, he hasn't actually left the building. He's been busy doing other things, but we will bring back our somewhat lonely attempts to scrutinise Nigel Farage's party with the same levels of attention that everybody else dedicates to the Labour Party. So Henry will be joining us in about 10 minutes' time, just after the 11:30 news. And then Simon Marks, who will be joining us from Washington, D.C., with one of his increasingly essential dispatches. I've held back a little on what Marco Rubio has said about the real reasons for this war. And I think that the stakes are too high for me to then open up the gates of Idiot's Corner and push people in who were unaware of what Marco Rubio has let slip about the real reasons for this war. But I think one area in which we can probably open up Idiot's Corner is all of the people who are saying that the intervention was entirely necessary because Iran was moments away from developing nuclear weapons. And this brings us back to Iraq. This brings us back to the weapons of mass destruction and all of the people, and not all of them stupid, not all of them by any means craven or cowardly or any of those things, who genuinely believed, because the government told them, that Saddam Hussein was about to develop or even launch weapons of mass destruction. So let's look at the claims that Iran is about to. Here is Benjamin Netanyahu in October, and you might want to just pause and make sure you're hearing me correctly when I tell you when this was, of October 1996.
The deadline for attaining this goal is getting extremely close. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing
September 2022.
The development of ballistic missile systems that they hope will reach the eastern seaboard of the United States within 15 years. By next
September
spring,
2012.
By next summer, at current enrichment rates, they will have finished the medium enrichment and move on to the final stage. From there, it's only a few months, possibly a few weeks, before they get enough enriched uranium for the first bomb.
The foremost sponsor of global terrorism could be weeks away from having enough enriched uranium for an entire arsenal of nuclear weapons. That would place a militant Islamic terrorist weeks away from having the fissile material for an entire arsenal of nuclear bombs.
If not stopped,
and June 2024.
Iran could produce a nuclear weapon in a very short time. It could be a year, it could be within a few months.
And of course, in June of 2025, they successfully demolished any ability that Iran had to develop these nuclear weapons that they've been on the brink of developing since at least 1996. And how do we know that? Because Benjamin Netanyahu told us. But yeah, that's right. You use that as a rationale for the latest attacks on the Middle East while completely ignoring the fact that the same rationale was deployed for the war in Iraq. Sorry, more phone calls. You could be forgiven for not knowing this was a phone-in program today. But someone's got to say this stuff. Margie is in the Wirral. Margie, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today.
I'm only laughing because it does actually sound like I'm only allowing other people to speak for a couple of minutes at the moment. I'll shut up for a while, or at least I'll try and probably fail. Go on, Margie.
Okay.
Fill your boots.
I would appreciate it because I do have 2 points to make, if you will indulge me for a short time. The first and foremost is I am absolutely furious, not only at what Trump said back in January about our troops, but also what he's saying now about Starmer's position. And I'll tell you for why. My father served 28 years in the RAF following World War II. As a result, I was born in Cyprus in Akrotiri. So hearing about the attack there yesterday really upset me. My grandfather served as an officer in the Navy during World War II. But more importantly, my son has not long come out of the army, having served 16 years in the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers, the REME. He did a tour of duty in Afghanistan and also in Iraq. one of those tours of duty, he called me telling me that he had been moved to the forward operation base the day before, and that within an hour of being there, they were attacked, and he was sat in his tent as a bullet ripped through the tent inches from his face and hit a pole on the other side. As you can imagine, that scared the living daylights out of me. So to hear a five-time draft dodger saying the things he's saying about our troops absolutely infuriates me. Moving on from that, my second point...
Don't move on yet. Because just let that settle for people. Because it is mothers that he's insulting when he insults. And fathers, mm-hmm. and wives and husbands, partners, boyfriends, girlfriends, brothers, sisters, children. Mm-hmm. And it's such an extraordinary thing to say about 454 war dead. Mm-hmm. That they and that's just the Brits. There are plenty of other NATO mm-hmm. allies, including Danes, of course. I think Denmark might have had the biggest per capita mortality rate. And, of course, at the time, he was insulting Denmark in an extraordinary fashion and threatening to steal Greenland. And this is the guy we're going to trust, Margie. This is the guy that we should be backing. This is the guy that Dick Littlejohn thinks we should trust over our own Prime Minister.
Absolutely not.
Incredible. Incredible. And then they pretend to care about soldiers. They pretend to care about the military when they dress themselves up, or someone on the telly doesn't wear a poppy, or a footballer of Irish heritage decides he doesn't want to, and they all have a fit of the vapours, and they all spit their dummies. And then when the Donald Trump, because they love the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial, literally insults your son's former comrades, literally insults them, they have absolutely nothing to say except, yeah, let's follow him into another Middle Eastern war with no lawful basis or viable thought-through plan. We're all going mad.
Exactly. So this war being illegal, following Iraq, which was illegal, my son actually took part in an illegal operation. And that is upsetting at the smallest stratagem of this.
Yeah, it's never been sort of officially concluded, but it should certainly have. Anyway, I don't think we can talk about Iran without remembering the lessons of Iraq, whatever those lessons may be.
Exactly. So, my second point, and if you will indulge me with this, I am in no way a conspiracy theorist. I think people who claim that we didn't go to the moon, blah, 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 and JF Kennedy's death was whatever it was. Just need to give their heads a wobble, quite frankly.
Yeah.
However, I have been taking a great deal of interest in Trump recently. More importantly, for the fact that I have first cousins who live in America. Two of my aunties went to live there after the Second World War, raised their families there, etc. So I have a vested interest in what's going on in America at the moment. And I've been piecing together. If you imagine a jigsaw puzzle and you see a small piece here and a small piece there and you put them together, they make a bigger picture.
Yeah, I know how jigsaws work.
Go on,
cut to the chase. Okay, stop being shy. Give it. Go on, hit me with it. I might have to dump you if it's litigious or libelous.
No, I will try not to be. So if you take, for instance, the fact that Netanyahu has been saying for 40 years now that Iran is trying to build a nuclear arsenal.
No, he's been saying for 40 years that they're pretty much done and dusted.
Yeah. And he has been trying to get the world involved in his plan to attack Iran for this so-called...
I'm going to have to hurry you up.
Okay.
All right.
Now, let's take into account the fact that...
No, you're not hurrying. Just give me the line. Give me the headline, because otherwise we're going to be late for the news.
Okay. Donald Trump is a stooge for Netanyahu, and he was recruited by Epstein. That is my...
Right, okay. I mean, I'm not going to dump that, but it is based upon zero evidence, except the ways in which that you have personally slotted the jigsaw pieces together.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, it stands. It is a conspiracy theory, and at this point in the cycle of history, I think it's crackers. but I don't think you're crackers. So I'm glad I hurried you up to get to the point, because it wasn't anywhere near as worrying as I thought it might be. But Epstein's involvement in both far-right politics and, indeed, sex trafficking has been underexplored and underreported. We haven't done enough on the sex trafficking and the paedophilia. And, of course, he was best friends with Donald Trump for 15 years. He was also best friends with Steve Bannon long after he was convicted of crimes against children. And Steve Bannon, at the time, was best friends with Nigel Farage, who he was advising, apparently, on Brexit. And, indeed, you don't have to take my word for it, because Nigel let the cat out of the bag after he'd had a pint or two, when he was photographed outside a pub with a pint, praising and thanking Steve Bannon for the role that he had played in delivering Brexit when he wasn't busy hanging out with his mate Jeffrey Epstein, the sex trafficker and paedophile. So there are many, many tentacles from Jeffrey Epstein's depravity that reach into many surprising corners of politics, but I haven't yet seen any evidence to support the existence of those particular tentacles, Margie, to be absolutely clear. It's coming up to 11:29. I think it's more likely, to be honest with you, that he is terrified of Vladimir Putin for reasons than he is enthralled to the Israeli regime. But I've got no particular proof for that either. It's coming up to 11:30. The phone lines are open. The question that we kind of began with yesterday was about whether or not Keir Starmer had got it right. And I haven't actually articulated that question yet today. We're going to hear from Henry Riley after this and then Simon Marks at 11:45. So when we come back at 12 o'clock, we will probably move into the areas of tell me how this ends, or have another nibble at the question of how anybody can think that Keir Starmer has got this wrong while being cognizant of A, what happened in Iraq, B, who and what Donald Trump has proven himself countless times to be, and C, the 454 British war dead that he was quite happy to malign and insult as long ago as January. It's currently March. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
A cabinet minister has stressed that the UK is still working closely with the United States after renewed criticism from Donald Trump. The US president has said Sir Keir Starmer's initial decision to block the use of UK military sites against Iran was not helpful. On day four of the conflict in the Middle East, Israel says it's carried out new attacks on Iran's leadership compound in Tehran. US Central Command says it's destroyed air defence sites and Iranian military airfields. Iran's response has included strikes on several Gulf states, including Oman, Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is preparing to deliver her spring statement this lunchtime. Borrowing and inflation could be revised down, but the latest outlook on growth and jobs is expected to have slowed. You can hear the statement live and in full on our sister station, LBC News. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most, cloudy in the southwest, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe, and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You. And when it comes to getting aircon into London's hot and stuffy apartments and listed buildings, I'm the daddy. For years, Cool You have supplied and installed fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condensers. So head to coolyou.london today. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Idle money lies in your current account, picking crumbs out of its belly button, wondering, should I eat them? But when you start investing with Monzo, your money's always busy. It turns on regular investments, invests your spare change, and tops up your stocks and shares ISA. It even helps you make sense of risk and return. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. You could get back less than you invest. Monzo current account required. UK residents 18 plus. T's and C's apply.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse,
knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:33 is the time. Simon Mark's on the way at about 11:46 or 7 on this programme with one of his increasingly essential dispatches from Washington, D.C., including, and I'll probably kick myself for this after the show, I probably should, well, no, because we've had a brilliant programme so far, in my humble opinion, so I didn't need to give you the Marco. If you're not across what Marco Rubio has said, because it's extraordinarily underreported in the UK media at the moment, then happily Simon Marks will be here to tell us about that particular cat let out of this particularly hideous bag, a bag which, just before we move on to matters domestic, currently sees the Iranian Red Crescent Society saying yesterday that at least 555 people had already been killed, while the Norway-based human rights group Hengor said the death toll on day three had reached at least 1,500 in Iran, including 200 civilians and 1,300 members of the Iranian forces. That number's only going to go in one direction, and it is also in Iran, or to Iran, that we turn to get today's unhinged headline that I think may involve a debut for the columnist Dan Hodges. Has he been on Unhinged Headlines before? I'm not sure, but he's in it today. We'll get onto that shortly. But first, so we launched this new feature. We didn't give it a name because chances are I'll forget about it and it won't turn into a feature at all. But we liked this one. So I asked Henry Wiley about, was it 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yesterday, 3 weeks ago yesterday. I said, just have a look. There seem to be quite a few stories bubbling around about all the stuff you'd expect in any party led by Nigel Farage. Bit of racism, bit of weirdness, bit of wrongness, bit of lies. Let's just do a quick rundown of what's gone on. So we came on the show on a Wednesday. I took him for a drink on Tuesday. We won't talk about what happened on Wednesday. and then he came back on the Tuesday with four more stories. And by the end of the week, we'd done about 28 stories, just in 1 week alone. But then Henry was called away to more important matters, like presenting programmes on LBC, which he does increasingly and rather well. So if you haven't treated yourself to that experience, then there's something to put on your to-do list. And then I think you had some time off.
Yeah. Yes-ish.
Okay, sort of. But now you're back. And rather than cast your eye over the last 2 weeks, which would actually take too long, I tasked you with looking at what's happened in Farage land in the last 24 hours.
Let's see what's happened in the last 24 hours. Can I get you to pick a number between 1 and 4, James?
3.
3. Well, this is obviously the sort of party of the motorist is something that's often frequently spoken about in politics. However, there is frustration among motorists because of the Reform UK West Northamptonshire Council. Let me tell you more. A group who represent the town centre businesses have said that these new changes are frustrating and disappointment. Two changes in essence. Firstly, they're increasing car parking charges in Northampton. They are,
you know,
also,
we don't really do motoring stories.
I know, I did think that.
Well,
I will get to a...
Did you clear this with anybody? Hang on, I just need to talk to... I don't know. He's doing a motoring story.
Sorry.
Is it?
Sorry.
This is... Oh, no. All right, carry on.
This is going to make it sound even more ridiculous. They're scrapping the 2 hours of free parking in Northampton at weekends, but also, crucially, something that has irritated a lot of locals, and actually there are some who are very worried, is they've now scrapped free parking for blue badge holders.
Oh, that's not a motoring story.
No,
that's an assault upon the disabled.
That is, well, it's been labelled by one disabled resident, Dennis, who said he's horrified by the changes.
Why have they done this?
Discrimination. Well, they have done this to save money.
So blue badge holders will have to pay to park?
Yes, they will. So previously they had it for free at council car parks. This hasn't come in yet. It's due to come in. It's been sort of approved. I can tell you how much it will save. So by scrapping blue badge parking in Northampton, so you can park for free in other West Northamptonshire towns like Toaster, for example.
Oh, yes.
But you can't park for free in Northampton now. And that's because that will raise 0.01% of the revenue budget, or £54,000. by getting rid of that. I need to see what reforms say. They say our principle is simple. If you use a service, you contribute to its cost. For years, this issue was avoided, not because it's complex, because it was uncomfortable to talk about. And worth pointing out that these new changes, parking is going up sort of by £2.40.
It's uncomfortable to talk about the fact that people who often can't walk have preferential treatment, or can't cover large amounts of ground without being in a car, have preferential treatment when it comes to using and parking a car.
And Dennis, who I mentioned, said disabled people are statistically most likely to be on benefits. They can't really afford to pay, and it does help if they're coming to town to be able to park near to a shop and be able to park for free. And this alongside a 4.95% increase in council tax, by the way, for the reform-led West Northamptonshire Council.
Martin Niemöller, when you need him. Should we stay in Northamptonshire?
Let's stay in Northamptonshire. One former cabinet member there is one of two reform councillors who've now resigned from the party. I haven't done you a sort of running total before you asked, James, because I'm still working on that. We're still working through the numbers, but I will get you a total in terms of how many councillors have left since the May 2024 elections. Karen Shaw, Councillor Catherine Shaw, I beg your pardon, resigned, citing concerns over safeguarding and the need to speak openly about child protection without political constraint. Now, it's pretty vague at the moment. You also have Joanna Blythe, who was suspended over the weekend and has now resigned from Reform yesterday and said she can no longer continue to work in the current environment and criticised the handling of complaints. She also criticised the lack of transparency and concerns over the treatment she'd received. In response, Reform said that she's betrayed her mandate and her residents. They've now lost three councillors in West Northamptonshire since the election. That means, James, that if they lose one more councillor, either through defection or suspension or if they resign, they will actually lose overall control of that authority which they currently run. So that will mean they don't essentially have a majority on that particular council.
Speaking of losing control, not having overall control of a council, I think in Doncaster, despite having the largest number of councillors, the technicality is such that the party's not actually in charge.
Yeah, it's strange this. So you have the Labour mayor, who's Ros Jones, who's been in for a long period of time. The party there, the Labour Party, who Ros Jones is a member of, wanted to increase services by or council tax by around 5%, because there was an issue that otherwise they would be £14.6 million worse off. Reform have rejected that and have decided that council tax will rise by just 2%. But the reason I picked that one out, James, is listen to this extraordinary interview. This is done by local democracy reporter Harry Harrison. Harry Harrison's good name, isn't it?
Fantastic name. It's like Brian O'Hanrahan.
And Harry Harrison is speaking with Councillor Craig Ward, who's the leader of Reform on the City of Doncaster Council.
Why have you proposed the amendment that you did?
Because I believe it's the best thing to do for Doncaster residents. We're trying to save them money. I believe it was the right thing to do.
And just to jump in there very, very early on, so that we can get it out the way and done. A couple of times in that meeting and in the amendment, it's claimed by Reform that residents have faced a maximum council tax increase for the last 3 years. That's a lie, isn't it? It's not true.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a lie, Harry.
It's not true. And I think you guys know it's not true.
It's not... Well, it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. It's been a rise.
That's okay. But for the record, then we should say, you know, last year it was 3.99%, which is not the maximum. The year before that, 4.99%. The year before that, 3.99%.
It's gone up consecutively.
It has, but it's not the maximum. One thing that was, of course, raised by Labour councillors during the meeting is 1.3 million in savings, which are not been determined in 2027-28. Do you have any idea at all what those savings are going to be?
What our savings are going to be?
In 2027-28, when there's 1.3 that's undetermined.
To be determined, yeah.
Putting a budget forward with undetermined savings.
Well...
cool. That was the extent of the answer. Harry Harrison talking with Councillor Craig Ward, who's the leader of Reform UK on City of Doncaster Council.
I like his style.
Not the
bloke ask about lies and saying it is what it is. But, you know, hey ho. The apple never falls far from the tree with Nigel Farage's political parties, which brings us to County Durham?
Yes, a really striking photograph that was shared there by their deputy leader, which is Darren Grimes, to sort of paint you a picture. It's a sort of suburban street with the houses on both sides and then a big coach that's arrived with, I think, is around 10 sort of young men who've gotten off. And the headline is, Durham is not a dumping ground, fixing the housing betrayal.
Oh, well, that will upset people.
Yeah, but it's a pretty striking image. The slight issue is that Darren Grimes, who shared this, has acknowledged that the photo was actually AI generated.
Oh, so it's completely made up?
Well, the photo doesn't exist. Yeah, well, it does exist in the AI form. It's not based on anything. Let me tell you what he has said. So he's admitted to using an AI-generated photo in a post about other local authorities shipping...
Well, it is what it is.
..families to the region. It is what it is. Yeah,
it is what it is. Blatant lie. It is what it is. Is it party policy just to lie now and say it is what it is? I don't know. Sorry.
On the 23rd of February, Durham County Council's Darren Grimes posted a blog he'd written in which he said southern councils were moving problem tenants, recent refugees and homeless families to the region. He was asked about the BBC about the photo, which had no caption at all. They wanted to know where it had taken place. The Reform UK councillor said it was AI generated and said the image was obviously for illustrative purposes. Darren Grimes said it was entirely predictable that the press were hyperventilating over the image instead of the fact that they were using the North Southern Councils as a dumping ground.
Right. But he didn't have any photographic evidence of the thing that he was actually complaining about.
He did say,
so
though...
he didn't pick a picture with children in it, for example.
No, he didn't. So the photo, he would have...
Very crafty.
Yeah, it's a completely made-up image.
Very crafty.
Crafty. And he said, you don't need a degree in advanced mathematics to see that the system is rigged.
No, but you do need at least some knowledge of AI to see that the photograph that he used for this story is rigged. So that's 4 for 4. Are we going to do it all week?
Yeah, oh, I've got some bad news. I'm off for a couple of days. I'm in. So tomorrow,
what
I'm
mean.
So, sorry, as in, I would love to carry on with this.
You've got more important things to do.
No, I'm in.
When are you off then?
Oh, well, Thursday and Friday.
Oh, that's okay. So do it Tuesday and Wednesday.
Absolutely. All if there's stuff to talk about, of course, with the
caveat.
Who
knows? Yeah, there may not be. Motoring even, maybe.
Yeah.
Only right. Should we give it a name, or should we just carry on winging it?
We named the erotic fiction one, and that they stopped writing them. So maybe
we
just...
only found. Did we find three?
Three in the end.
Examples of Reform UK members writing erotic fiction.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll sort of think on.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
You woke up this morning to one newspaper saying in their interview with Donald Trump he was very disappointed. Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones. As regards the relationship we have with the United States, it's fair now to question our loyalty from our side of that relationship, Mr. Jones.
No, I don't accept that, Nick, because our relationship is important to us and it will continue to be. But it's also right that we make decisions in the UK based on our legal frameworks, our own plans and British interests.
But you're the lawmaker, Mr. Jones. The legal framework is set by you and your colleagues. If, and I put it to you that the legal framework perhaps here is not working, that is for you and your colleagues to change.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on, if they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, Anne. With free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now.
UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
The Hillary sale ends soon. So get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made to measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to like arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And by the way, tip-offs welcome. We probably set up another email account that we then forget about and never check, Eleanor, couldn't we? Tip-offs welcome for Henry Reilly's reform roundup. Reilly's reform roundup. Does that have a, it doesn't quite work, does it? It needs a bit more. I don't know. Anyway, Simon Marks is here with his increasingly essential bulletin from Washington. And I just hand you the floor, I think, Simon. No prizes for guessing what's going to lead the conversation.
Well, we're all over the map still, James, and the White House apparently is stung by the fact that so many of the president's normally ardent supporters are finding fault with his strategy-free war of choice against Iran. And we're now at the point where even last night, the president of the United States engaged in such a total U-turn that he took to his own social media feed to argue that there's nothing inherently wrong with forever wars. He was trying to explain to his followers why people like Tucker Carlson are wrong when they say that this war is going to prove to be a real problem because it's going to deplete American munitions stockpiles very quickly and that the defense industry here is not in a position to replace them as rapidly as the president of the United States may need, not least, of course, because the United States has sent so much weaponry to Ukraine. So Donald Trump on his Truth Social last night says the United States munitions stockpiles have, at the medium and upper medium grade, never been higher or better. We have a virtually unlimited supply of these weapons. And then he goes on to say this: wars can be fought forever and very successfully using just these supplies, which are better than other countries' finest arms. So that gives you a sense of the fact that it is already apparent that because there's no plan, events in the Middle East are spinning in a direction that military planners here in the White House have now to be realizing could involve a deepening American commitment. The president told the New York Post yesterday in one of these telephone interviews that he's been giving ad hoc to individual reporters that he's not necessarily ruling out the idea of putting boots on the ground. He said, "I don't have the yips about boots on the ground like other American presidents have done, but the polling here is utterly woeful." CNN has done a survey overnight. Nearly 6 in 10 Americans disapprove of the decision to take military action in Iran. Most of them, 56%, say they believe a long-term military conflict between the two nations is likely. Only a quarter, 27%, believe that the United States made enough of an effort at diplomacy with Iran before using military force, and 39% say the U.S. did not try hard enough at using diplomacy first. So he's got a massive sales job, and it gets more complicated by the hour because of the shifting sands in the administration's story. And most dramatically, late yesterday afternoon here, Secretary of State Marco Rubio finally broke cover and spoke to reporters. and revealed that the United States' hand in Iran and the decision to go to war had essentially been forced by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As you and I were talking about on this program yesterday, we were discussing whether it was possible that the Israelis had said, we're going in, you've got to come in with us. To which, of course, the United States could have said, we're not coming in with you. Well, Secretary of State Marco Rubio clarified yesterday that the Americans absolutely did go in because Benjamin Netanyahu was about to go in. Let's take a listen.
The imminent threat was that we knew that if Iran was attacked, and we believed they would be attacked, that they would immediately come after us. And we were not going to sit there and absorb a blow before we responded. Had we not done so, there would have been hearings on Capitol Hill about how we knew that this was going to happen and we didn't act preemptively to prevent more casualties and more loss of life. Obviously, we were aware of Israeli intentions and understood what that would mean for us, and we had to be prepared to act as a result of it.
And the Secretary of State also defined very clearly the objectives for this military action that the United States is taking in Iran. And they are much narrower than the objectives that President Trump had indicated over the weekend that were on his to-do list, including, of course, toppling the regime. That, according to the Secretary of State, is not part of the plan.
Number one is our mission and our focus is the destruction of their ballistic missile capabilities and their ability to manufacture them, as well as the threat posed by their Navy to global shipping. That's our objective. That said, we would not mind, we would not be heartbroken, and we hope that the Iranian people can overthrow this government and establish a new future for that country. We would love for that to be possible. But the objective of this mission is the destruction of their ballistic missile capabilities and of their naval capabilities. Oh my God.
We would love for it to be possible for the Iranian government to be overthrown by their own people, but that's not the game we're in, is what Marco Rubio was saying. President Trump, also when he appeared before the public yesterday, similarly minimized the objectives for the first time and indicated, as he's done on Truth Social overnight, that if this takes a long while, he's up for it.
We will easily prevail. We're already substantially ahead of our time projections, but whatever the time is, it's okay. Whatever it takes, we will always, and we have right from the beginning, we projected 4 to 5 weeks, but we have capability to go far longer than that. We'll do it. Whatever somebody said today, they said, oh, well, if the president wants to do it really quickly, after that, he'll get bored. I don't get bored. There's nothing boring about this.
Nothing boring about this, especially if you're a military family wondering about the safety of your loved ones in the region. And I think the most astonishing takeaway from all of that is the extent to which Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, has been in the driving seat of all of this. And that news goes off like a depth charge beneath Trump's base.
Why? Just remind us why it is such a potentially damaging revelation from Rubio. And did he let it slip accidentally? Or, I mean, is he just not very good at this diplomacy lark?
No, there was reporting going on all day. And indeed, there's a big piece in the New York Times that's been published in its Tuesday edition explaining what had been taking place behind the scenes.
Yes.
With apparently at some points the Americans saying to Benjamin Netanyahu earlier in the year, we're not ready to go yet. And so Benjamin Netanyahu had, as we surmised, been putting pressure on the Trump administration to do this. And we know that there was internal disagreement from that New York Times piece, with Vice President J.D. Vance initially not supportive of the idea to take military action, but then saying to the president and to the national security team, if we're going to go in, we need to go in hard and fast, you know, hot and heavy, and get this done. So he's been as all over the map personally as the administration has been generally about all of this. But the reason why this is a depth charge with the base is because, depending on which of the various MAGA and America First influences you look at, for many, the idea that the United States is not in charge of its own foreign and defence policy is, regardless of who is president of the United States, you know, a catastrophic loss of sovereignty. But there are also far-right figures within that base who have a deep vein of anti-Israel sentiment, in some cases anti-Semitic sentiment, and the idea that Israel is basically telling the president of the United States what to do and he is snapping to attention and doing it, is a massive, massive problem. The white supremacist Nick Fuentes, who, remember, has been dined with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago in the past, went way off the reservation, even for him, last night, and called for the Trump administration to be taken down because of these revelations of the extent to which the president of the United States appears to have capitulated to an Israeli prime minister.
Good Lord. He didn't sound well. If that had been Joe Biden, then there'd be front page stories about his mental acuity. But it's not just mental health that Donald Trump appears to be struggling with at the moment.
No, and of course, if any of this had been about Joe Biden, I mean, just look at the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan and look at the way in which the Trump team was responding to that. If any of this had been about Biden, Republicans would be on their feet baying. Yesterday, as you know, for weeks, Donald Trump has had this unexplained bruise on the back of his hand. I say unexplained. I mean, they've offered, again, shifting explanations for it, but none of them standing up to scrutiny. Now, suddenly, he has some kind of scarring on the back of his neck that is being treated with some form of ointment. So as soon as those pictures emerged yesterday, social media calls were going out to doctors to see if they could explain what it is. It is fresh evidence of the fact that there are physical issues that the White House does not appear to have been honest or accountable about with the American people. I mean, with the back of the hand, we were told, first of all, it was because he shakes so many hands.
Right.
Then he said that another bruise was because he bashed himself on the side of a table. But what is going on with the neck, we do not know.
Good Lord. It's odd that, because I heard the owner of Newsmax being interviewed on the BBC recently, and he explained that he believes Donald Trump should leave his body to medical science because he's such an unprecedented example of human magnificence, or almost like a sort of superhero in mortal guise. But so I know we may hear more about that. Do you want to play a game?
Go on.
That's a no.
I haven't had my breakfast, but go on.
Which British politician said this? I'm not in favour of military action against Iran. I want UK troops in fewer wars.
I'm going to go with Nigel Farage.
Oh, you're so good at this. And of course, the point being, he said that when the American president was black, not orange. So funny how the wind changes. Simon Mark's always brilliant. In fact, I wasn't expecting you to get that right, but he must have been perhaps looking at the same archaeologists of social media activity that I've been looking at. Simon, I have a feeling we'll catch up, if not tomorrow, then certainly before the end of the week, but probably tomorrow. A little bit more on the epic weapons-grade hypocrisy of Nigel Farage. We don't need to take foreign policy advice from the American president. The last time we did that, it was called the Iraq War. That's I think that was when the US president was white. That was Joe Biden. And now, of course, it is this. The Prime Minister needs to change his mind on the use of our military bases and back the Americans in the vital fight against Iran. So this is the same man, all right, speaking about the same activity against the same country. I'm not in favour of military action against Iran. I want UK troops in fewer wars. That's when Barack Obama was president. We don't need to take foreign policy advice from the American president. The last time we did that, it was called the Iraq War. That's when Joe Biden was president. And then fast forward to yesterday when Donald Trump was president. The Prime Minister needs to change his mind on the use of our military bases and back the Americans in this vital fight against Iran. Well, if only there were a word for that kind of conduct. It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government has stressed the UK is still working closely with the US after fresh criticism from President Trump. Mr. Trump has branded Keir Starmer as not helpful in the American-Israeli war against Iran. He's again criticised the UK's initial decision to block the US from using military bases for defensive strikes. The Lib Dem deputy leader, Daisy Cooper, says she wants clarity on what the sites are actually being used for.
We are pleased that this government is showing restraint, but we have been pressing the Prime Minister because it is not yet clear to us what the legal distinction is between defensive action and offensive, and we are calling on the government to publish full legal advice related to that definition.
Israel says it's carried out new attacks on Iran's leadership compound in Tehran, while US Central Command says it's destroyed Iranian air defences and military airfields. Iran's response has included strikes on several Gulf states, including Oman, Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Former British ambassador to Iran, Sir Richard Dalton, has told LBC pressure is building on the US to justify its actions.
There was clear indications from leaders of Congress after the briefing a few days before it was launched that there was no reason shown to them why there was compelling reasons for the United States to go to war. They are now soft-pedaling their regime change justification. They are now preparing their people for a long period of war.
Air travel in the Middle East remains severely disrupted by the conflict. Emirates says it has resumed limited flights to the UK and other European destinations from Dubai, but the airline has told passengers not to head to the airports unless contacted directly. And oil and gas prices are climbing in response to the ongoing conflict. The spike comes as Iran has warned that it will target ships travelling through the Strait of Hormuz. And the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is preparing to deliver her spring statement shortly, but the latest official forecasts for government spending, growth and inflation won't include the potential impact from the Iran conflict. You can hear the statement live and in full on our sister station, LBC News. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 286 at 10,493. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most going into the afternoon. Cloudy in the southwest, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Finally, we honor one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a terror.
Sorry? What, pardon? Anyway, Dan's in Cornwall. You will never get it, will you, James? Trump is far more of a leader than our PM. He takes the right decision to take out the evil. Starmer is just trying to protect the Muslim vote, who are the whole problem first place. Mate, I tell you what, when you find out what Sunni and Shia means, and indeed how many Gulf states are responding to the attacks upon Iran, then if you were capable of giving your head a wobble, then you probably would. But let's just listen again to that brilliant leader that Dan in Cornwall, who has christened Idiot's Corner this morning, is so admiring of.
Finally, we honour one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a terror.
I have no idea. I don't know about you, but I have absolutely no idea what is going on there. And it leads to the Marco Rubio quotes that Simon Marks just shared with you. The accidental or deliberate, I don't know which, and we may never. Revelation about what really went on this weekend.
The imminent threat was that we knew that if Iran was attacked, and we believed they would be attacked, that they would immediately come after us. And we were not going to sit there and absorb a blow before we responded. Had we not done so, there would have been hearings on Capitol Hill about how we knew that this was going to happen and we didn't act preemptively to prevent more casualties and more loss of life. Obviously, we were aware of Israeli intentions and understood what that would mean for us, and we had to be prepared to act as a result of it.
I think this is really significant, and so clearly did Simon, but it is almost absent from UK coverage today. And what it means is that the US administration was incapable of stopping Benjamin Netanyahu from committing what is quite possibly another war crime. And they feared the retaliation from Iran as a consequence of that probable war crime. And therefore they joined Benjamin Netanyahu in committing a probable war crime in order to minimize the potency of any response to that probable war crime from the hideous regime in Iran. There are moments in life where you don't have to pick a side, you know, where you can hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. The hideousness of the Ayatollah's regime and the Revolutionary Guard in Iran's stranglehold upon the throat of freedom and democracy in the kingdom of Iran, in the country of Iran. And also the utter inadequacy, unsuitability, depravity of Donald Trump and his cronies to undertake any form of world policing or moral high ground. Marco Rubio there effectively giving the game away. This only happened because they can't control Benjamin Netanyahu, whose political fortunes are once again back in the balance. And he's already proved to be something of a Harry Houdini when it comes to electoral success. And he obviously fancies another crack of the whip, because the only way he stays out of court is by staying in power. And therefore, I think they've just gone into Beirut, have they? Have they just crossed the line into Lebanon as well? And we know that they're attacking Lebanon. Hezbollah have fired missiles at Israel with the time of reading the story this morning, no casualties and no deaths, and Israel have responded by killing people in Lebanon. That's the bit, isn't it? Right there. How do you support this now? So, first of all, let's run through some of the arguments that we have encountered. You don't need to worry about international law, because the people who break international law break international law. Therefore, the people who should uphold international law should break international law as well. Have I got that right? Is that the argument? Stop worrying about international law, because the people who break international law break international law. Therefore, the people who uphold international law should break international law as well. What needs laws? Let's just get rid of all laws. Okay? So that's point one. Point two, Donald Trump is I don't know how seriously we should take Dan in Cornwall, but he thinks Donald Trump's a really cool guy, a real leader, a real kind of inspiration, and much better than Keir Starmer, this guy.
Finally, we honor one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a really terror.
Actually, get the Starmer clip as well that we started with today, because I think that we'll compare those two. The one where he was in the House of Commons yesterday. Yeah, this is our Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we all remember the mistakes of Iraq, and we have learned those lessons. Any UK actions must always have a lawful basis and a viable, thought-through plan. I say again, we were not involved in the initial strikes on Iran, and we will not join offensive action now.
So, I mean, just to make a brief list, Dick Littlejohn and pretty much everybody else at the Daily Mail, every right-wing blowhard with a check making their way, heading their way from whoever owns GB News. Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the Conservative Party. Nigel Farage, who, of course, changes his opinion on foreign policy depending on the colour of the skin of the American president. All of those guys, they want this man to be in charge of what is going on in Iran at the moment, and they think we should be following the lead of Donald Trump.
Finally, we honour one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a really terror.
He's the guy we should be following. Definitely not this guy. Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, we all remember the mistakes of Iraq, and we have learned those lessons. Any UK actions must always have a lawful basis and a viable, thought-through plan. I say again, we were not involved in the initial strikes on Iran, and we will not join offensive action now. But in the face of Iran's barrage of missiles and drones, we will protect our people in the region and support the collective self-defence of our allies, because that is our duty to the British people. It is the best way to eliminate the urgent threat, to prevent the situation spiralling further, and support a return to diplomacy. It is the best way to protect British interests and British lives. That is what this government is doing.
So I said a moment ago, you don't have to pick a side, and I meant in the context of the comparative horrors of the two regimes. You can want the Ayatollah to be removed, but you can think that Donald Trump is the last person on the planet, or Benjamin Netanyahu is the last person on the planet qualified or justified in doing it. But you kind of do have to pick a side between Donald Trump and Keir Starmer. And most of the UK media has picked Donald Trump, the man who you heard there at a Medal of Honor ceremony, that he spent mostly talking about curtains and the new ballroom that he's building, not about the two dead and one living military heroes that were supposed to be honored. I think, and I probably should check this, I think at one point he suggested he should have been given the Congressional Medal of Honor himself during that ceremony. And you sit here with Iraq in your mind, and you wonder how anybody can be picking the first guy over the second guy, let alone British people, patriotic people. And Nigel Farage had it right when Barack Obama was president. This is how we ended up in Iraq. But now, of course, Donald Trump is president. Nigel Farage is all for military intervention, all for the bombs dropping on the Middle East. Would it be too early to try to get into the psychology of the people that have picked Trump over their own prime minister? What do you think drives that? So Starmer is getting a kicking from, I don't want to say the left, but it's probably the closest word I can think of to the constituency I'm describing. He's getting a kicking from the left for allowing UK bases to be used for retaliation against attacks upon our allies and ourselves, potentially. That's all. That's all he's doing. And it will be imperfect, because war always is. And it may be the start of mission creep, because war often is. But as things stand today, which is all that we can analyse, he is allowing UK bases to be used to retaliate against enemy action on our allies and ourselves. But he is categorically not allying himself with the original act of aggression, which only happened because Donald Trump can't control Benjamin Netanyahu. And yet people are saying we should be with Trump, not with Starmer. We should be with Trump, not with Starmer. Do you want to have a crack? And I mean, if I'm describing you, I can't promise that we won't have a bit of an argument, but it'll be a friendly one and a respectful one. How the hell does that work? How does that position work? So you're listening to Trump fail to make sense and insult the memory of the war dead many, many times over the years, and even manage to turn a ceremony honouring two dead heroes and one still living into a real estate, an estate agent's tour around his latest carbuncle that he's sticking on the side of the White House. So you've heard all of that. You know what happened in Iraq. You know who Donald Trump is. You know that this attack has only happened because Benjamin Netanyahu is out of Donald Trump's control. But Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, letting it be known that they only did it because they felt they had to get in with their retaliation before they'd actually been attacked. What? You know all of this. And you're still saying that Donald Trump is the man you want on your team rather than Keir Starmer? Just, I mean, if it's not you that I'm describing, but it is a position that you're capable of understanding, whether it's Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail, Dick by name, as he's known, or whether it is Kemi Badenoch or Nigel Farage or all the usual suspects queuing up to pour praise on Donald Trump, who I'm going to play you one more time, sounding absolutely incoherent, while attacking our own Prime Minister, who has managed in, and this is my opinion, I chalk this up as counting, but he has, in my opinion, managed to walk an incredibly fine line that is best understood as upholding our national interest, detaching himself meaningfully from the people who've undertaken an almost certainly unlawful attack, and protecting, if you like, our people, our personnel and our territories. An incredibly difficult thing to do. While the other guy sounds like this.
Finally, we honor one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world, of wars, and really a terror.
So Starmer has upheld international law at a crucial moment. He's kept meaningful distance from so-called allies, treating it with contempt. He's defended the national interest, and he's served the network of global obligations designed to make the world safer. And Donald Trump can't even talk properly. Explain to me why anyone would pick the latter over the former at a time of international crisis like this.
LBC.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you've saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm. We'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
And what do you support as well? Because Rubio and Trump and Vance all seem to be in favour of different things. Vance is now saying that the US doesn't want a multi-year conflict. Trump was on social media last night saying that he was well up for it. It reminded some of you of the national anthem in Borat. Do you remember that? Where they say, oh, potassium is better than everybody else's. That's the way Donald Trump seemed to be talking about medium grade and upper medium grade weapon. I mean, you'll have to read it or listen back on live radio because Simon Marks quoted it in full earlier. So how can you support something if you don't know what you're supporting? Are you supporting Marco Rubio's war, Donald Trump's war, J.D. Vance's war, or Benjamin Netanyahu's war? Because they are all four measurably and demonstrably different wars. Oh, I'm supporting all the wars. Okay. Why? Because Iraq went so well? Because Donald Trump is such a stand-up guy? Because his support and respect for the military is so well established? Alex is in York. Alex, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello,
can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
First of all, I've been listening to you for years, so it's a great honour for me to finally be able to talk to you.
No, it's not. It's a massive anti-climax, but it's a pleasure for me to talk to you. Go on.
You always crack me up. I'm Iranian, and I think I kind of live in the grey, because obviously there's a very significant emotional reaction to what's occurring. But then there's also the kind of rational side of you, which looks and says, well, of course this is a horrible idea. You bombed the head of state of another country when they were in a bunker, which my emotional side, my kind of Iranian emotional reaction is, you know, when I heard about that news, I started crying, tears of joy. Because the thought of being able to take, for example, my girlfriend who's English, to Iran and show her around one day, like even the thought that was now 1% more likely, just it was a very raw emotional reaction.
Yeah.
But then looking at what's going on now from a rational point of view, I can see that obviously international law is being broken. I don't think there's any argument against that. Obviously, without a concrete plan in place, things could get worse. But I think for many Iranians, the Islamic Republic has been seen as such an unmovable object for so long that to see it even shift, even if it's potentially in the wrong direction, has a very positive emotional reaction, which is very hard for the rationality to overcome.
This is beautifully put, and I really do salute your perspicacity. And I almost hesitate to say what I'm about to say next, but I took calls like this from Libyans not long ago.
Mm. Go on.
That's it. That's it. And I mean, and you know, spoiler alert, you know what happened in Libya.
Yeah.
Which doesn't challenge anything that you've said, because the heart and the head are in conflict with each other. The heart is celebrating and the head is cautious, and the heart will prevail, because now the heart is trying to persuade the head that, well, whatever happens next is going to be better than what went before. But history and precedent, which are not in your heart, they're in your head. The history and the precedent suggest that things are not going to get better.
Yeah. I suppose that there is also an element of hope, right? That goes back to the heart.
Well, I share your hope.
Yeah, because we've seen that sometimes it can lead to positive outcomes like Kosovo, but then obviously there's more in common with the failed instances of foreign intervention.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for example, my parents, they were born there. They came here because my dad, quote, said he doesn't want to raise me in a theocracy.
Yeah, fair enough.
And when the protests were happening, people were getting shot, he was bawling his eyes out, despite no one that we know actually getting hurt, thank God. But like, he's been so upbeat, so happy since the weekend, which was actually my birthday weekend as well.
happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. But, you know, it's that kind of that dichotomy of the rationality versus...
And that's very helpful for us as well, who've been trying to discuss this all day, because I can't argue with you. I'm not going to argue with your heart over what it feels. All I can do, and this is why I've been wanging on about how the law is objective, and the law won't be subject to emotion, ideally, and nor should good journalism, you know, without having family on the ground or skin in the game, or however you want to phrase it. You have to retain objectivity, and objectivity would lean towards worrying more than celebrating, I think. I really do. And I would love, and I hope, and I will talk again, but I would absolutely love to be wrong. But I wonder how big a factor in your thoughts the identity of the people responsible for what you wanted is. The fact that it is, Benjamin Netanyahu apparently pulling the strings, Donald Trump dancing to his tune, two men who are not going to win any prizes anytime soon on a fair world stage for either diplomacy or decency.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to start by making by basically pointing out, first of all, that I am someone who has for a long time recognized that there has been a genocide in Palestine, or in Gaza, let's say.
Yes.
And so, whilst lots of analysts like to parrot the narrative that you can't support the downfall of the Islamic Republic and also not be supportive of Netanyahu or Trump, I think that's completely bogus.
Of course,
I'm one of those people.
Yes, so am I.
But, I mean, again, it
doesn't matter today who they are. Yeah, they've just done that. They got the job done. To paraphrase Hamilton.
My eyes, regardless of if it was Obama, Biden, or Trump who initiated that strike.
Yeah.
Because the rational side of me now worries, because I don't think Trump's the type to have a long-term plan.
Well, he's boasting about, or Lindsey Graham is boasting about how he doesn't have one and why he doesn't need one. And now you've got Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance. I don't think this is an exaggeration. Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, and Benjamin Netanyahu all fighting a different war. All planning for a different outcome. Is it too early for me to say to you, to quote General David Petraeus from the middle of the Second Gulf War, and just say, tell me how this ends? Best case scenario, Alex, because you'd be more clued up on the possibilities than I am.
Best case scenario. So in Iran, you have two militaries, effectively. You have the secular military that predates the Islamic Republic.
Yes.
And you have the Revolutionary Guard. Now, in parallel to what we saw when the Islamic Revolution happened, the absolute best case scenario is for the secular military to take over an airport, an airfield, get the crown prince in as a rallying figure, and then you have people, a figurehead, and a military all on your side, and then the pathway to a kind of democratic Iran becomes much clearer. Although my rational side steps in again when I have this kind of emotional best-case scenario and says the risk of civil war increases significantly as well in that scenario.
Which is the worst imaginable outcome. And what we don't know, although again you probably know more about it than I do, is what the regime would have had in place for precisely this moment. Whether it accommodated just how much of the head has been cut off, I don't currently know. But the likelihood of them having had some fairly comprehensive plans in place for what would happen next is surely very, very high.
It's very likely. And when you see in Switzerland, for example, a lot of the infrastructure is rigged to blow. I would not be surprised if in Iran it was very similar. And with very mountainous terrain, you need that infrastructure to be able to move around.
Alex, thank you for your, not only your wise words and your insights, but also for your honesty, your clear sightedness on that tension that I've been trying to articulate all morning, but I can't if I'm not living it. I can't articulate it as clearly or as powerfully as Alex has done, the tension between heart and head, something that we talk about a heck of a lot on this program. But it's why you can hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. Trump is absolutely awful. Netanyahu has presided over genocide, led genocide in Gaza, and the removal of the Ayatollah from the Iranian regime is something to be celebrated. It's what happened next. You take all three of those moving parts and try and assemble something stable. We're not going to have a great deal of time for this, but if you want to have a crack at telling me how does this end, that crucial question that should underpin... Colin Powell had another one, actually. There was another line that Colin Powell always used to use, and these people have been there. They've been in the room where it happens. It doesn't mean they're brilliantly qualified or infallible or anything like that, but David Petraeus would say, tell me how this ends, and Colin Powell would say, make sure you have a specific political objective. That's the late General Colin Powell describing the first rule of successful warfare. Make sure you have a specific political objective. And Brexit Britain has turned into a country where some of the most prominent politicians and pundits don't believe Colin Powell was right and don't have any answers at all to General David Petraeus's question, and couldn't, if they were put to the task, they wouldn't even be able to tell you whose war they support. Donald Trump's, J.D. Vance's, Marco Rubio's, or Benjamin Netanyahu's, because you can't really support all four of them when they're measurably and demonstrably different. Mo's in Hounslow. Mo, what would you like to say?
Hey, James, thank you for having me on, mate. How are you doing? You're right?
Yeah, I'm good. I've just got to do some business. Can you bear with me a minute?
Of course, business is business, mate.
All right. That's a very good point you make, Mo. The Chancellor is due to deliver her spring statement imminently. If you want to listen to it in full, then you can do so on our sister station, LBC News. If you want to stick with the big show, then do so. And we'll be picking up on what Rachel Reeves has or indeed hasn't said with Natasha Clark before the end of this programme. And that means I will come to Mo in Hounslow first after the news rather than... Shall we hit one on time, Keith, just for clicks and giggles? Shall we hit one? Okay. Well, I can't go yet because I'll be 30 seconds early. Have I hit every news bulletin late today? Yes. Okay. Oh, it's pretty standard. I know Matt's ready, but I'm going to hit this one on time. I'm not going to hit it early because that's almost as bad as hitting it late, isn't it? Yeah, so I'm just going to... No, I'm not going to go early. I mean, you can't make me go early. I'm going to go bang on time, which will be in about 20 seconds time. If you are just joining us, the question that we're asking is, given what we know about Trump, given what we now know about Netanyahu's role in forcing Trump's hand, given what we know about the war in Iraq, and given what we know about humanity itself, how the hell can the preponderance of the UK commentariat and right-wing politicians be in favour of a war that they can't even describe, that doesn't meet Colin Powell's test, and which doesn't have an answer to David Petraeus's question? Here's Matt Hewitt with your headlines.
The Foreign Secretary has told MPs that a government charter flight is being arranged to evacuate British nationals from the Middle East. Yvette Cooper also told the Commons 130,000 British nationals have registered their presence in the region as of this morning. On day four of the conflict, we're hearing the UK is considering sending a warship to the Middle East, while France is reportedly planning to move air defence systems to Cyprus after a British base on the island was hit by a drone. Israel says it's carried out new attacks on Iran's leadership compound in Tehran. And the Chancellor is about to get to her feet to deliver her spring statement. Borrowing and inflation could be revised down, but the latest outlook on growth and jobs is expected to have slowed. You can hear the statement live in full on our sister station, LBC News. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most, cloudy in the southwest, and highs of 7 to 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
How big's the job? Compact and nimble? That's the Vauxhall combo. A bit of everything? Meet the award-winning Vivaro. Or is it a load-it-all job? That's Movano. Whatever the job, there's a Vauxhall van for it. Right now, during the Vauxhall Pro Days van event, until the 16th of March, you can save £750 off any new Vauxhall van, electric or diesel, on top of all other offers. Search Vauxhall van range. Business users only, 18 plus, £750 excluding VAT. T's and C's apply. Search Vauxhall van range.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw, so you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man, so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's your lucky day, and you win the birthday draw. So...
let's go, Kev. Goat cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
The Thames Link train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12.33 is the time. Rachel Reeves poised to make her spring statement in the House of Commons. Natasha Clark listening to it so that you don't have to. And we'll catch up with Natasha shortly. Before that, we return to the biggest story in town at the moment, which is the unfolding, a continuing and increasingly confusing situation in Iran. The question of how anybody can be in favour of what Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu have done, as it becomes increasingly clear that it has not been done for the reasons originally believed. And crucially for me, the lessons of Iraq appear to have been completely ignored, although we've kind of ignored that element of the conversation a little bit. I was expecting it to feature rather more heavily. Back to Mo in Hounslow. Mo, what would you like to say?
Yeah, thank you for having me back, James. Just wanted to say that it looks like we're repeating Iraq, Syria, Libya.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, not Syria, actually. Syria was when Ed Miliband didn't, or sort of led the resistance in the House of Commons to the UK joining Barack Obama in an attack on Syria, and therefore Barack Obama didn't do it. But certainly Libya and Iraq fit the category.
Definitely, yeah. But it's just crazy to see that in this day and age we're witnessing two leaders, well, one of them is actually wanted for genocide with the ICC, and another whose whole campaign was based on ending US foreign intervention in wars.
He's bombed more. I mean, well, you know what you've done. You've kind of focused my mind on something I was going to say at the end of the program. These people don't actually support anything or believe in anything. They just pick a person and support them whatever they do. So if you're a Nigel Farage fan in this country at the moment, are you for or against the engagement in Iran? And you can't answer that question because it depends on what colour the United States president is. When the United States president is black, Nigel Farage is passionately opposed to American intervention in Iran. And when the American president is orange, he's a huge fan of it. So if you're a British Nigel Farage fan, you don't actually believe in anything except my guy. He's my guy. And like Donald Trump, what he gives in return is racism, misogyny, and climate change denial. That's literally all you get in the extreme.
It's tribalistic nature. If your leader takes one position, you're automatically going to take his position, and that's the way some people are wired. You can't control that.
And that's why Starmer is in such an unenviable position, because he appeals to none of those people from either side of the political divide. So people to the left of him think he shouldn't even be retaliating to attacks upon our allies, and people to the right of him think that he should have hopped into bed with Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Regardless of what they actually do, that there are guys, and Starmer, because he's a lawyer, is wired completely differently from that. He's incapable of doing something for binary tribal footballification reasons, and politics at the moment on this side of the world is defined almost entirely in terms of tribal binary reasons. What a mess.
At this point, we just got to ask ourselves, what comes first? Is it politics or our humanity? At the end of the day, is when wars happen, is the innocents that always get hurt first? When are we going to start seeing them as collateral damage, leaving apologies like what happened with the schoolgirls.
Well,
at the end of days.
You make a powerful point. I'm not a pacifist. Maybe I should be. You sound as if you're closer to that position than I am, in that I think that sometimes very, very bad people need to be dealt with by international unity under the auspices of international law. And I would point at Kosovo as an example of that working, and I'd point at the Second World War as well, and I'd point at the Falklands as well, where fewer British service personnel died than in Afghanistan. And of course, Donald Trump chose to malign the memories of all of the ones that fell in Afghanistan as long ago as last January, which makes it all the more mysterious that anybody who professes to be supportive of this country or supportive of our military or in any way patriotic can now be cheerleading for a man who insulted our dead soldiers while attacking our Prime Minister, who is keen to minimise the number of future dead soldiers. It's just, it's a very strange one. But I think, thanks partly to Mo marshalling my thoughts, you don't actually believe in anything, do you, if you're one of these people? You just believe in the colour of the scarf that you wear. So what if a Tory Prime Minister had recognised the importance of international law, or a legal basis for war, and the necessity of a viable thought-through plan? This is a genuine question, and it's not by any stretch of the imagination an impossible prospect. I could see John Major going down that road. I could see Theresa May, maybe not Theresa May, but we're not going to support America's probably illegal actions in Iran because they do not have a viable thought-through plan, and there is no legal basis for this attack. Now, if a Tory Prime Minister had done that, how would the people who still cling to the carcasses of Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity, how would they have processed it? Because Keir Starmer is far from left-wing. He's for good or for ill, he's a sort of process-driven pragmatist who isn't terribly good at domestic politics. But if a Tory Prime Minister, I don't know, has Ben Wallace spoken on this subject yet? He's always worth listening to. Had simply said, we will welcome the removal of the Ayatollah from the head of the Iranian regime, but we are not going to get involved in a probably illegal act with no viable thought-through plan. It's so eminently sensible that I wonder whether you need to be fully paid up in footballification to oppose it. You just have to turn your brain off and go, Labour bad, Trump good. Please don't ask me any more complicated questions. I don't know. 12:39 is the time. Thank you, Mo. Grant's in Brixton. Grant, what would you like to say?
Hi. Well, by no means, I'm absolutely not a Farage follower at all. In fact, I run the other way. Mr. Farage tends to go with whoever pays him the most, it would seem. With regards to the death of the head of the Shia Muslim religion, it's the equivalent of killing the Pope.
The Pope, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
For Shia Muslims, as opposed to, yeah, I mean, just to be clear.
Yeah. So you've got about 300 million Shia Muslims, up to about 300 million Shia Muslims in the world. And regardless of whether you are a follower of the Islamic Republic, but they all saw him basically as the head of their religion. And not necessarily, it's like us being Catholic, a few of us being Catholics, we don't necessarily follow the teachings of the Pope, but, you know, we do respect it. And that is one thing. And for, certainly, I know,
A little bit personally if someone killed him.
Some have definitely taken it very personal that they've killed him.
Yes.
But I think the idea of killing the head of a religious, well, you can't really call it a sect. It's not a sect. It's a mainstay religion. It's a significant part of the Islamic mosaic. And you've literally wiped out the leader, murdered the leader of their section. You're creating problems for the future, and people have memories, and lifetime memories. So it'll be like the children of Gaza. They will remember the destruction and everything else that comes with the Israelis. It's probably with that they don't care. The Israelis don't care whether they kill them or not. So if they're not there, there's nobody there to come back at them later.
Yes.
I'm afraid I think this whole debacle that's come up. I think it is a game where President Trump has been forced to play patty cake with by Netanyahu.
For people just joining us, that is Marco Rubio's essential analysis. That is what he has said overnight that fits almost entirely with Grant's analysis. I was a bit taken by surprise by that, albeit that Simon reminded me earlier that we discussed the possibility that that was what had happened.
Rubio does look quite embarrassed at times we'd hope so as well. But I think for the Israelis, I think the Israelis were doing like a bit of a side seat shuffle. Here, look, we'll set off a few fireworks here on the right. And while everybody's looking to the right at all the lovely fireworks,
we're going
to
attack Lebanon.
And they've literally cleared the way. From the middle of the night before last, literally millions of people have been pushed out of South Lebanon, and they're bombing right up into Beirut at the moment.
They've shut all crossings into Gaza as well, which effectively imposes a siege on a territory where the only food you can get hold of has to come in pretty much from outside. Israeli forces controlling 60% of the territory, with almost all food eaten in Gaza brought in from outside. So, as you probably know, Grant, humanitarian groups responsible for feeding much of the population say that the supplies that they had on Saturday when the war began and the borders were closed will only last a few more days. So now we're seeing more fears of famine in Gaza, attacks on Lebanon, and the world is talking about Iran. That's what you're describing, I think.
Yep. Very much so.
That's a bleak analysis, but everything you've done is factually accurate, factually clear. I've asked other people this. You sound like a clever bloke, so I'll ask you as well. Tell me how this ends.
Am I back speaking with you?
Yeah. Your phone went a bit funny. Your line went down.
I got cut off there.
No, you're back.
Yes.
Now.
I really do think. I hope it doesn't end up as a civil war within Iran, because that helps nobody. As Alex, your previous caller, had said, he really did hit the nail on the head. I really feel he hit the nail on the head. And with a little hope, we could see a regime change. But let's be perfectly honest here. And I don't think President Trump understands this. He didn't cut the head off the snake. The infrastructure, the whole network of the Islamic Republic is still very much intact. Within a day, they already have a stand-in leader, and they're all pretty wise to what happens when one goes, somebody fills the shoes, and they continue business as normal. And for the friends that I have, the Iranian friends that I have here, they will tell you they're just as active now against those who were against the Ayatollah as they were before. But I think the bigger play, we're missing the bigger play. Israel has played a really big trick on all of us.
Well, everything, as I say, you've said is accurate. Well, you didn't mention the shutting of the crossings into Gaza. I did, but certainly the attacks on Lebanon are being reported, but they're being reported second or third or fourth down a bulletin because, of course, what's going on in Iran is more measurable significance. Mark writes of Grant, this guy has joined the dots, James. 12:45 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And how widely understood in the West do you think that point about Shia Muslims is? That point about the Ayatollah being the leader of effectively a religion, comparable, if you like, to the Pope. It just in terms of status and the nature of being the pinnacle of a pyramid of a religious faith, a branch of Islam, but a self-contained religion as well, just as, you know, you can have the Church of England and Catholicism as branches of Christianity, well, part of the same religion, although I was about to say, although Shia and Sunni historically are rather more aggressive towards each other than Christians and Catholics, which would demonstrate an ignorance of English history right up there with Kemi Badenoch's ignorance of Islamic history. Well, and English history and geography and maths and English literature.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Is now the time to go all in with the US on Iran? Should a planned march vigil honouring Ayatollah Khamenei be allowed to go ahead? And is Donald Trump right about Keir Starmer fearing Muslim voters?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg. Flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:49. Me and Keith are going to do some work together now, so you might want to talk among yourselves. If you're listening just before that last junction, I was doing a list of all the things Kemi Badenoch doesn't understand, and what I wanted to achieve was a sort of fading out type of sound before Keith fires, what do we call it? The tape. Fires the stab. It's an interesting phrase. Before Keith fires the stab, and then you would hear the beginning of the commercial break or something like that. Now, obviously, we haven't got another commercial break, so we're going to do an unhinged headline, but we're going to try a new thing where instead of turning it down, because that's hard for Keith and I to communicate, I'm going to move away from the microphone slowly as I speak, and then Keith, using his skills, will decide at what point to fire the stab, which will be unhinged headline, and I've got one. It's a doozy, and we will know then for the future whether or not I can add this to the arsenal of effects that I routinely deploy on the programme. So I suggested that by completely forgetting that in the reign of Henry VIII and afterwards, the one type of Christian in this country was routinely murdering another type of Christian, and then we changed monarch and they swapped sides. The Catholics were in charge and the Protestants were in charge, and they were murdering each other with gay abandon under Elizabeth I and her sister Mary. So I suggested that I had almost demonstrated an ignorance of English history that would be, or Christian history, English Christian history, that would be up there with Kemi Badenoch's ignorance of Islamic history or Middle Eastern history. or geography, or English literature, or international law, or French, or economics, or chemistry, or physics.
Unhinged headline.
Did it work? What? Well, let me know on 84850. Unhinged headline. This can't be a debut for Dan Hodges. He must have written 30 unhinged headlines before breakfast most days. 48 hours that prove Zach Polanski and his marauding Greens now run Britain's foreign policy. Sorry, what? Pardon? 48 hours that prove Zach Polanski and his marauding Greens now run Britain's foreign policy. Thank you for today's
unhinged headline.
And just once more, with feeling, can we get that clip of Trump talking about the soldier? Because I just want Dan Hodges and Dick Little John, Dick by name, and everybody else to the one we played, the short one that we did at the top today. I want everyone to be aware of who it is they are backing, championing and cheerleading for while attacking our own democratically elected Prime Minister, who on this occasion, and I, as you know, have been very critical of Keir Starmer recently, but on this occasion he has somehow managed to walk an incredibly difficult tightrope between international law, the national interest. Well, let me put it clearly. He has upheld international law at a crucial moment, kept meaningful distance from allies, treating it with contempt, defended the national interest and served the network of global obligations designed to make the world safer. But every Daily Mail columnist under the sun, probably 80% of broadcasters in the commercial sector, and every newspaper except The Guardian, The Eye and The Mirror, they prefer this guy.
Finally, we honor one more American soldier, a fallen warrior of world of wars, and really a really terror.
Okay. Are we going to hear from Natasha? Maybe not. It depends how much longer Rachel Reeves talks for. Happily, Heath is here in Houston. Heath in Houston. What would you like to say?
Hi. I'm kind of in the Bible Belt, the South, and I work in oil and gas. And
gosh.
I'm by all accounts as meant to be as probably conservative as you can find.
Sure.
But I find myself to be feel pretty alone. My entire family, parents and siblings are conservative. I work in the oil and gas industry, yeah. So I'm surrounded by conservatives all day, who look at what's going on with Iran and look at it through a lens of what is this going to do for the price of oil. And I would just say that, especially because this is a British conversation, I listen because it's good to hear the perspective of the world outside the United States. And if I'm stuck in this bubble, sometimes it's hard to drown out the voices that you hear, because you think you're crazy and you think that to say that this behavior from our administration is crazy. You think you yourself are crazy because you're not surrounded by the people that are also speaking out against it.
There's a line in Orwell, you probably know it, Heath, but if you can cling on to the truth, even against the whole world, you would not go mad. Listen, we all feel we're crazy most mornings as well, but about 49% of Britons are opposed to these strikes on Iran. 28% of them are in favour. I mean, albeit that you live in a self-selecting sample of the US population, the public support for this in the States isn't high either. Beyond the boundaries of your life and work, the public are not really on board for this time.
Well, part of the campaign promise, it's just another one of the myriad of lies that's been told, that one of the campaign promises was no new wars. And then to hear the about face by the administration, I think it was clearly what was on the table as soon as we went into Venezuela, as soon as they renamed the Department of Defense, the Department of War. I think we all saw the writing on the wall.
And as you will know, he's now ordered more attacks on more countries than any other president in the modern era. When you say, and just let me pick your brains for a moment, when you use the word conservative in the context that you just did, is that now in the United States, in your corner of the United States, does that word have any different meaning to MAGA?
I think the lines have become incredibly blurred.
Yeah.
I think take family for instance.
Sure.
I love my family, and I love my parents.
Of course.
And I've grown up Southern Baptist, so evangelical as you can be. Mm. But now we're in an era where conservatives that even you may say, these are good salt of the earth people, they can't bring themselves to denounce the behavior that's right in front of their eyes. And a part of that issue is some of what happens isn't even shown to them. I mean, they're getting fed whatever's on their algorithm already on Facebook or TikTok, but also they have Fox News on like 24/7, and that's a huge part of the problem.
And it possibly wouldn't matter anyway, because as you've said, he's doing the polar opposite of what he promised to do, and the people that cheer him, some of the people that cheer him, don't cheer him any less when he's doing the opposite of what they were cheering him for promising he was going to do 10 minutes ago. Hey, you're not alone. Thank you, Heath. And next time you ring in, let's have an argument, all right? Let's pick something else. But it's nice to hear that we reach parts of the world like yours, because it must be a very lonely place to be at the moment. And yet the facts should be a unifying force. And I'm moving on only because Natasha Clark has slid into the studio with a brief update on the still unfolding spring statement that that Rachel Reeves has been giving in the last 20 minutes.
Yes, that's right, James. And as you were sort of suggesting earlier, obviously this isn't going to be a big main spring statement like we usually do. It's going to have no tax and spend policies that we understand. But what it will be is a bit of an update on the public finances, how well our economy is growing, and basically will people be feeling better off by the end of the parliament or not. And we've had two main bits of news that Rachel Reeves has delivered so far. She sounds like she's actually suffering from a little bit of a cold, according to her voice, bless her. GDP, according to the statistics that she's just read out in the House of Commons, is going to go up so the economy is going to be growing.
That'll be OBR.
Yes, the OBR, right. The Office for Budget Responsibility, is adjusting the profile of our economy up, so GDP will be growing slightly slower in this year, 2026 and 2027, but then be going up again. She told us just a couple of minutes ago that meant growth will be on the up.
I've always said that growth is for a purpose, to make working people better off. And I can confirm that GDP per person is set to grow more than was expected in the autumn, with growth of 5.6% over the course of this Parliament. That compares to a fall in GDP per capita in the last Parliament. And by the next election, after accounting for inflation, people are forecast to be £1,000 better off per year.
But obviously, James, the events in the Middle East have been completely dominating, and there are questions today about how much these statistics will be in date or not. She said that all that she could do was provide as much stability as she could, bearing in mind the instability in the Middle East.
A plan that is even more important in a world that in the last few days has become yet more uncertain. With unfolding conflict in Iran and the Middle East, it is incumbent on me and on this government to chart a course through that uncertainty, to secure our economy against shocks and protect families from the turbulence that we see beyond our borders. I want to express my gratitude to members of our armed forces as they serve across the globe to protect our country. And I want to reassure this House that I am in regular contact with the Governor of the Bank of England, with my international counterparts, and with key affected industries.
Now, James, we haven't got an OBR leak today, so I can't tell you what's been going on in the official documents. We'll be poring over those as soon as they drop when the Chancellor sits down this afternoon.
Last word today to Kevin, who writes, good grief, a Heath, surrounded by conservative belief, let on the show by Keith to cut his teeth, but keep it brief, and air his beef on LBC. Thank you, Kevin. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much indeed. We'll pick up again with Natasha once those documents are out. She's had a good look at them for us a little later. We'll also talk with Lewis Goodall of the news agents about Hillary Clinton's appearance before Congress, sight of which we now have, and talk as well about the comedy programme in America, Saturday Night Live, SNL as it's known, when Lewis joins us as well. Because it's been talking about John Davidson and Tourette's in a way that I, for one, don't think is particularly acceptable. We'll reflect a little later in the programme on the 5 years that have passed since the murder of Sarah Everard. I'll be joined by Patsy Stevenson, who was arrested at that protest on Clapham Common. But we begin with Iran and what comes next, as well as what's happening right now.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Foreign Secretary has told MPs that a government charter flight is being arranged to evacuate British nationals from the Middle East. With the conflict centred on Iran into its fourth day, Yvette Cooper also told the Commons 130,000 British people have registered their presence in the region as of this morning.
We have unprecedented numbers of British nationals in the region, and I will continue to update members and affected British nationals as the situation evolves.
A handful of flights will arrive at Heathrow, Gatwick and Manchester today. Stephen Pearson from the Association of British Travel Agents has said travellers do have rights.
If you've booked with a UK or an EU company, they are required to get you home at no additional cost. If you've booked with a different country's operator, then you need to check with their policies.
It's reported the UK government is considering sending a warship to Cyprus. It's thought HMS Duncan would be used to defend the RAF base there from the threat of missiles. The Type 45 destroyer is the only British ship with the ability to shoot down ballistic missiles. Overnight, Iran carried out strikes on Israel and a US embassy in Saudi Arabia. America has warned the hardest hits on Iran are yet to come. There are reports a humanitarian crisis is developing in Lebanon, where thousands of people have been displaced. Israel ordered people in the south of the country to evacuate their homes as IDF forces targeted Hezbollah militants who fired rockets into Israel. Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz, a vital route for transporting oil and gas out of the Gulf states. The price of oil has hit a one-year high, and the wholesale cost of gas has nearly doubled in 2 days. The Chancellor says she's charting a course through global uncertainty as she delivers her spring statement. In the last half hour, Rachel Reeves told the Commons her plan is the right one.
Inflation is down. Yeah. Borrowing is down. Yeah. Living standards are up and the economy is growing. Yeah.
She said official forecasts show national income will grow more slowly than predicted this year, but faster than predicted after that. And unemployment is forecast to peak this year and then fall every year until 2029. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 280 at 10,499. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and sunny for most. Cloudy in the southwest, highs of 7 to 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Now, as well as keeping a close eye on events as they happen, we're going to have a few conversations this afternoon on exactly how Britain should proceed when it comes to our relationship with the United States on all of this and other aspects besides. But I think that's a pretty central question at the moment. Before we get into it, just a reminder of where we are up to. Israel says it has carried out new attacks on Iran's leadership compound, as they called it, in Tehran, including the presidential office. One reporter inside Iran says every part of Tehran has been hit since Saturday. There's been damage as well to a nuclear site in a place called Natanz. The number of people killed in Iran since US-Israeli attacks began on Saturday has reached 787, according to the Red Crescent. A number of people have died in Israel as well in a couple of different circumstances. bombings, but separate incidents. In Israel, the defense minister says ground troops will advance and seize additional strategic areas, not in Iran, but in Lebanon. The UK government, for its part, has announced its first charter flight to bring people back from the region. It will leave Oman in the coming days, is all they've said about the timetable on that. Now, Donald Trump, he'd already alluded to it, but in an interview with Harry Cole of The Sun, he went a lot further on his disappointment, as he called it, with Keir Starmer in not allowing US planes on the offensive to use a UK base that had been requested. Speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast, Harry Cole, who interviewed Donald Trump, said that the president had told him the special relationship between the US and the UK used to be the steadiest relationship.
He's talked of his disappointment, but not just that, of the, he used to say the special relationship isn't what it used to be. Relations aren't what they used to be. He said it's incredibly sad. He finds it very frustrating. He doesn't understand why Keir Starmer is doing this. And he says he loves the UK. He loves the British people. And they will be upset as well. The president said very clearly, you know, we used to have, this used to be the steadiest of relationships between Britain and America. And now we have better relations with Europe. He name-checked France. Yes. He name-checked Germany. He name-checked NATO, which, you know, if you listen to anything Donald Trump said for the last year or two, you know, is pretty unusual. So you can tell how annoyed he is by Starmer by who he's comparing him to.
Well, Matt Fry joins me, LBC presenter on Saturdays, of course, 10 till 12, and Channel 4 news presenter. Matt, the special relationship, I mean, we talk about it a lot, don't we, here in the UK, and we hear about
it too much.
Endlessly in this situation, too much. We're going to do it again. But this whole question of the decision that Keir Starmer made, he said yesterday very clearly in Parliament, didn't he, why he had made it, and that it was a very deliberate decision. So neither party is, as things speak, changing their mind on this, are they?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I lived in America for 11 years, Sheila. I talked about the special relationship ad nauseam. I remember meeting my first meeting with a British ambassador, the late Sir Christopher Mayer, after 9/11. And he said to me, Matt, dear boy, the world is a jumbo jet. The Americans are in the cockpit and we, the Brits, are in first. Everyone else is in economy, in coach. So, and there was this whole notion at the time that Britain was the Athens to America's Rome, that we had the brains and the nuance and the diplomatic finesse to guide America. Well, how did that end up in the Iraq war? We're thinking of movie titles here. One was Fatal Attraction, George Bush's Fatal Attraction to Tony Blair and vice versa, especially Tony Blair's Fatal Attraction. And ultimately, it was that Fatal Attraction that did for him in the Labour Party and as Prime Minister. And then, of course, the other movie is Love Actually. And there was that famous scene in Love Actually where the American president played by Billy Bob Thornton, he gets a flea in his ear from Hugh Grant, the British Prime Minister, who gives the kind of speech that I'm sure many British Prime Ministers dream of delivering. And I think that's sort of what Keir Starmer did yesterday in the House of Commons, where he said, more or less, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, we will defend our interests and our allies, and therefore we will use, you know, our military assets in the region to do so, especially Cyprus, especially when they come under attack. But we will not take part in what we regard as an illegal war, however awful the regime that it has removed or is removing is. And I think that nuance between the awful